This is the Kevin and Bean Show, minutes away, again, from the debut on the Kevin and Bean Show, the new R. Kelly song. You won't want to miss it. We keep listening to it off the air. We can't wait to hear it.
He's genius.
He's the best. All right, let's talk about a show you have no interest in. They had it this week at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. It's called the Kennedy Center Honors, and it's been going on for about 40 years. It's one of those it's a party where the president comes out, and he and the first lady get dressed up, and they have a distinguished guest that show up, and they honor ordinary citizens. So they basically say, hey, you've contributed a lot to America because you're a tremendous artist, so we're going to give you a prize.
And
it's for people who become famous because they're famous because of their contribution to the arts.
Oh, okay.
But for instance, this year they said, hey, Robert De Niro, thanks for being an American. Here's a prize. They also honored the filmmaker Mel Brooks this year. And our friend Bruce Springsteen was also at the Kennedy Center. He got a nod from the president. I believe the president had something very nice to say about it.
And the final honor of the night, rocker Bruce Springsteen.
I'm the president, but he's the boss.
Come on.
Nice.
Bruce, congratulations on the honor from the president, and thank you for joining us again on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, Kevin and Bean, thanks so much. Appreciate the kind words.
Certainly, yeah. You've been you're 60 years old. You've been a performer for most of your life. You had a big party in D.C. Saturday night, a State Department dinner. You got to meet the president. Must have felt like a crowning achievement for you.
Yeah, I'll tell you, starting out in the little clubs in New Jersey, I never thought I'd end up at a state dinner with the President of the United States and all these other people in uncomfortable looking tuxedos looking at me.
Yeah.
So it was a dream come true, really, for a guy from Jersey just playing guitar, and now all of a sudden getting one of these awards really was something.
Sure. So how do you celebrate something like that? I mean, you had the party with the president. You must have been on quite a high when the evening ended.
You know, I remember being at the event, the awards dinner, and I was just backstage. And
right.
I remember looking across the room and seeing President Obama and his wife, Michelle. And I said, look at that, America's first African-American president.
Right.
And, you know, it was a time when people wouldn't consider that even possible. Yet here I was looking at it, receiving an award from that president.
Right.
And I went up to his wife and I said, you know, Lincoln freed the slaves, and I'm about to take one back. And I grabbed her by the hand and I took her to the Lincoln bedroom.
Oh, my God.
No.
This didn't happen.
Michelle and I decided to make sweet love that night.
I don't think that's
true.
And when I tiptoed out of the Lincoln bedroom after I exhausted her,
that didn't happen.
I ran into De Niro in the hallway.
Right.
Who had done the same thing with Hillary Clinton.
Is that right?
And I said to Bob, hey, what do you say we go find that Grace Brumbry who won the award for opera and show her a thing or two? Make the wobbly H.
Oh, yeah. Really?
So Bobby and I crept down the hallway.
In the White House.
In the White House.
None of this happened.
Found that old opera singer broad, and she wasn't up for it.
Really?
So we had to bludgeon her to death.
Oh, come on.
Picked up a bust of Benjamin Franklin.
That's not...
We would have smashed across the crown of her head.
Is this... That's ridiculous.
Her brains were all over the carpet.
Oh, Bruce, come on.
That didn't happen.
Nero said... Look, I'm parked in the back. Let's throw in the trunk.
That didn't happen either.
Get some shovel and a bag of lye.
None of that happened.
Take her out and put her in a shallow grave near the Potomac.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, Bruce, come on.
So De Niro and I hit the road, driving down that lonely highway towards the Potomac River.
Right.
We realized Mel Brooks had been sleeping in the trunk.
What?
Apparently, he got a load on. Being an old Jew, he doesn't hold his booze too well.
Are you sure any of these details?
Turns out he was in the back seat and saw the whole thing.
Wow.
So what'd you have to do?
Of course, we can't have any witnesses.
Right.
So we tied him to a rock.
Right.
Threw him in the Potomac River.
Oh, you killed Mel Brooks.
That didn't happen either.
Watched as the air bubbles finally ended and he slowly slipped below the surface.
None of that happened, Bruce.
He said, we love Blazing Saddles. We don't think he heard us.
Right, because he was drowning.
Because he was drowning.
Yeah.
After Bobby and I buried that opera singer abroad, the sun started to rise.
None of that happened.
Over the Washington Monument.
Right.
It must have been beautiful.
Feeling patriotic. We went down to the diner and ordered some ham and eggs. laughed about how our lives had turned out.
Well, I wouldn't have seen that one coming either.
Yeah.
Congratulations, boss. Yeah, I bet you are.
Yeah.
Well done.
Ralph has another look at the showbiz beat coming up in a few minutes here on the Kevin and Bean Show. First, though, Kevin, my advice to you is to not listen to this next story. This is going to creep you out when you hear what old people are doing.
When Roger gets to an intimate stage with a woman these days, it usually doesn't take long until the sexy photos start talking about sexting. You know the word sexting.
It's been
in the news a lot because some teenagers are doing it, and then they don't realize that maybe if they send it to one person, perhaps it might be sent to millions of people.
Right.
And it can go terribly wrong. This is a guy saying, I'll say, you have an amazing body. You have amazing breasts. And the next thing you know, I'll get a picture of breasts. And it's an old dude.
Oh, no.
Hello.
Old people are sexting.
Wow.
Okay.
Hello.
Now, I have to ask, what is your cutoff? How old is too old for people to be sexually active and enjoy it? Because the guy... Yes, go ahead.
I hope they're sexually active, but I don't want it. I don't want to see it.
Right.
This guy in the article that they're writing about is 59 years old.
Right.
Too old to be sexting?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're afraid of what those pictures might look like that either he's sending out or he's receiving, right?
I don't like to think of like my parents. You know what I mean? Like it's just.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's sending it to someone his age and they can appreciate him, that's okay, right?
Yeah, I guess that's good.
If you don't ever
I'm
have
just
to
saying,
see.
I don't want to see. And what kind of pictures is he getting back, really, honestly, by the time? You know what I mean?
Well, yes, I do.
You know what? Things tend to drop.
Yes.
A relationship expert says whether they're single and casually dating, married, or in long-term relationships, older people want sexual activity, too. They want to flirt. It makes them feel lively. It makes them feel young. Who did producer Alex line up? I understand she's got somebody with some knowledge of the sexting story for us to talk to here?
I do not know. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Clifford R. Angston.
Clifford Angston.
Yes.
And where are you from, sir?
I am from the Sunnyvale home for the perpetually slow.
Okay.
It's great retirement home, and we do not move quickly.
Right. I understand, right? Well, Clifford, you're very kind to come on. Can you hear us okay?
What?
I said, are you able to hear us all right? Because we talk kind of fast for old people.
No, thanks. I've already had breakfast.
What do you know about this trend of older people sexting, sending suggestive text messages and photos back and forth?
Here at Sunnyvale, we do a lot of texting.
Right.
And sexting.
You do that too.
Oh, we're a horny crew.
Right.
And I sext all the time. Now,
but is it just text or are there photos involved? Because
hold on, I just got a message. Okay. I gotta send something back. Hold a second.
Okay.
Yeah, baby. Swallow my Metamucil.
What?
Oh, that is not sexy at all, Clifford.
Where was I?
You were talking about text or pictures.
Yes, the pictures are the best.
Oh, no.
I love when a hot mama sends me some pictures. And the best part is a woman can send me a picture of her legs and her boobs at the same time. I see the whole package.
But that's good.
Hold on a second.
All right. Something
baby,
else coming.
I love when you use your poly grip on me.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, my partner Kevin here feels that older people should never take their clothes off. How do you feel about that, Clifford?
Well, it makes it hard to hump that way.
I don't mind if they do. I just don't want to see it.
I want a woman totally naked when I am with her.
Right.
I want nothing but her and her colostomy bag.
That's what I'm saying. That's not sexy.
I don't want anything to get between us. Especially the colostomy bag.
That's just not...
Put a little pressure on that sucker, and there she blows!
Okay. No one wants
sexy.
No one wants that.
You guys... Hold a second. Baby... Send me some of your used underwear.
Oh, no.
Or depends.
I think I'm coming around to Kevin's way of thinking now that we've had this conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. The Viagra's kicking in.
Uh-oh.
I gotta go.
Okay. All right.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
102. 102? Wow.
102.
Do you know something we don't know?
No.
11.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed that.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show. Very excited about our next guest. We've been looking forward to it for a long time. He is a former high-ranking member of the Church of Scientology who now is putting his life on the line by publishing a book called Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. It is available at his website, blownforgood.com or amazon.com. Please welcome to the program Mark Headley, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Pretty good.
Now, I half joke, as I'm sure you've heard all of these jokes before. Here's a man who's putting his life on the line, because the impression that we get, those of us who aren't in Scientology or know that much about it, is you speak out against Scientology, bad things happen to you and your family. How overstated is that belief?
It's not that overstated at all. I mean, I've had private investigators follow me around. I've had people dig through my garbage. Child services got an anonymous tip that my kids were endangered, and they had to do an inspection at my house. And
the first,
you know,
the first story in the book you tell is you trying to literally physically drive away from the Scientology headquarters, and them running you off the road.
That's right. Yeah, the day I left, was basically chased down by a security SUV from the compound there, and there's actually a police report online that anybody can look up. Just Google Mark Headley police report, and sure enough, there's two Riverside sheriff's deputies that basically document the pretty much the whole event of what took place.
Mark, how long were you involved in the church?
I started when I was very young, when I was probably like 7 or 8 years old, in the early 1980s, like 1980, 1979. And I started working for them in 1989, and I stopped working for them in 2005, and pretty much severed my connection with them then.
What was it that was attractive to you about Scientology that kept you in it so long?
Well, I mean, for one, I grew up in it. So my mom was in it, and I went to a Scientology school. I had Scientology friends, so I was kind of just in it.
That's all you knew. That's all you knew as a kid.
Yeah, that's how I grew up, and that's what I knew to be the way the world worked and how things were, and
we're gonna take
Scientology way.
We're going to take calls 1-800-520-1067 in a second. How high did you get in the church?
I didn't get that high in terms of their training levels and their, their counseling. I mean, I haven't even read the book Dianetics.
You're not very good Scientologist, I'll tell you that right
now. No, I'm a, I was a worker. When I was there, I was an employee, and, I worked there for 15 years for, 100-hour weeks, earned for the entire 15 years I was there, I earned 39 cents an hour as an average wage.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
I made $29,000 in 15 years.
Wow.
For 100 hours a week, every single week for 15 years.
Then why didn't you get out after the first month if you realized that's what the pay was?
That's what the book is about. That it explains what are the pitfalls of trying to leave and the fear of being recaptured, and then what the punishments are if you are recaptured when you do attempt to leave, and the disconnection policy that they enforce where you can't speak to your family ever again.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the disconnect, because that's one of the – that to me, that's a big red flag. Any religion that wants to separate you from your family, to me, that's a red flag that says don't do this. But they're serious about it, right?
Yeah. I mean, when I left in 2005 – before I even had a chance to contact any of my family, my mother, my sister, and my brother were all informed that they would never be able to speak to me ever again. And I haven't spoken to them since the day I left.
Oh, my gosh.
And if they do choose to speak to me, then they themselves can be declared a suppressive person.
That's the.
And
that's
then they won't be able to speak to anybody that they know that's a Scientologist.
So the suppressive term, that's what they term you when you're an enemy of the church, basically. So,
yeah.
So even if your mom were to call and say, hey, I just want to make sure you're healthy, you know, and everything's going okay, they would cut her off as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. When my wife gave birth to our first son, I called her parents from the hospital room, and I called and I said, hey, I just want to let you know Claire's okay, click. I hung up.
Really?
Yep. Wow. They've never seen their grandchildren.
Wow.
This is the voice of author Mark Headley on The Kevin and Bean Show. The book is called Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology, available at Amazon.com. And I think it's worth mentioning something here, Mark, because sometimes people will come across the dial when we have a topic like this on, and they'll think that it has something to do with being against religion or against the beliefs that people have. I don't think that's where we're coming from. Look, I think lots of religions are crazy. I think the Xenu story is just as crazy as the Jesus story, if you want my personal opinion. But where Scientology does seem to differ is the types of things you're talking about, the disconnect policy, the crazy amounts of money that you have to pay for materials and that sort of thing. That's what makes it different from all the other religions that we know and talk about, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And also, I've made that very clear in the book, and also and things that I've posted about the book and promotion I've done. This is not a book about the philosophy of Scientology. There's very little, counseling or training techniques. That very little of that stuff is covered in here. This is about the business of Scientology, and this is about the human rights abuses of the organization of Scientology and how they treat their employees and how they treat their members and some of the things that go on inside when people who do want to leave try to leave and what happens to them.
What were your thoughts, Mark, when you saw the news story that got quite a bit of play a couple of months ago about writer-director Paul Haggis, who won an Oscar, I think, either for Crash or Million Dollar Baby. He wrote them both. But he very publicly left Scientology. He put a full-page ad in the paper with a letter explaining why. Did the types of things that he was talking about ring true to your experience as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that he brought up in that letter that he wrote was this policy of disconnection and how the Scientology public spokesperson, a guy by the name of Tommy Davis, he said on national TV that the policy of disconnection does not exist. And any Scientologist hearing that would immediately know that he's lying, because it's one of the first things you learn in Scientology is about disconnection. And Paul Haggis himself experienced it with a family member who was disconnected.
Yeah. There is a level of secrecy that you don't see in, really, I don't think, any other, quote, religion. And that is, I mean, in your book, you have a map of the headquarters, and all of the buildings have abbreviations, and you kind of have to learn, like, what all the abbreviations are. And I got to tell you, I was reading your book. I had to skip ahead. It was too complex. There's no possible way. Why did they need an abbreviation for everything?
That's the way they roll there.
But why?
Just because they want to make everything faster, and they want to make it so it's its own language. And to an outsider, it would be impossible for you to infiltrate them, because the language everything that is there is so coded that you literally do have to be there for a long time in Scientology, even to be able to make it in the higher levels of the organization, because everything is coded in the policies and the abbreviations and all the Scientology technology. So
it's very much like the Dharma Initiative on Lost. That's what you're saying, right, Mark?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let me ask you one more question. Then we're going to take a break and come back with your questions for Mark Headley, the author of Blown for Good. If you have any questions you've always wanted to ask about Scientology, Mark is the man who wrote the book about how they operate. You can give us a call at 1-800-520-1067. With all this press in recent years, especially books like yours, the Paul Haggis story, the news out of Germany that they declared not a church, it's a cult. What's the state of Scientology these days? Is it continuing to grow, or is it losing members because of all of this kind of publicity?
I think it's losing members, personally, and also just from I've gotten emails and letters from Scientologists who've read the book saying that it answered a lot of questions that they've been having. It explained a lot of things that happened within the church that they didn't even know why they were happening. It was just the oppression from management and
right.
Different policies that are coming down. And they just, a few weeks ago, got convicted of organized fraud in France. They have a huge investigation that's being asked for in Australia by a senator down there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things that are happening that the members themselves are questioning, you know, why are we doing what we're doing, and why are these things happening to us? And they're starting to look to the Internet for answers, and the ones they're finding are contrary to what they've been being told Scientology management.
We need to take a break. If you could hold on, we do want to talk to you some more. One of the things that was fascinating to me about your book was that you did the, what is it, auditing? Is that what they call it? The auditing?
The counseling, yes.
With Tom Cruise.
That's correct.
You and Tom Cruise.
Fascinating.
So I want to ask you about that when we get back. Plus, we'll take phone calls, 1-800-520-1067. The book is Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. Why does that line keep clicking?
I think we know why, and I think somebody's listening in. Somebody's taking down some addresses. I think that's what's happening.
Okay. Hang on, Mark. We'll be right back.
You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. We're talking to author Mark Headley.
Dead man walking.
He has written a book called Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. It is available from Amazon.com or blownforgood.com. Hey, there's no, Mark, there's no conspiracy involved in why it's not available in regular bookstores that you can walk in and pick up, is there?
No, I mean, we just, we printed a small amount for publication. I actually started my own publishing company so that I could publish the book.
Okay.
It'll be available in Barnes & Noble and other stores.
Yeah, and if you can get it from Amazon, let's face it, that's good for everybody. All right, 1-800-520-1067. We're going to squeeze in as many calls as we have time for, but Kevin asked you right before the break to talk about your experiences with Tom Cruise, who I got to tell you, we've had him on this show a couple of times before. Couldn't be a nicer guy, a more positive, upbeat, talented guy. I mean, everything we know about Tom Cruise suggests that he's an awesome dude, yet people still kind of give him the funny look because of how deep into Scientology he is. What's up with that?
Well, I think that once you really become a hardcore Scientologist, you basically have this whole other reality or this whole other universe that you operate in. And sometimes when, like that video that was leaked of him talking to a lot of Scientologists.
That was scary.
Scientologists, they think that video is the best video that was ever made.
But right.
When somebody on the outside of Scientology looks at it, they just go, whoa, that's pretty spooky.
What was it like to be in the room with him and doing the auditing thing?
I mean, it was pretty much, you know, oh my God, that's Tom Cruise, the big movie star guy. I mean, he had just done Days of Thunder, you know, Top Gun, Born on 4th of July. So, you know, at the time, I was just like, wow. You know, I probably had more attention on the fact that, you know, I was sitting across from Tom Cruise than whatever, you know, counseling or whatever we were.
You also talk about the search for the wife for.
Oh, yeah.
For Tom Cruise's wife.
Was that real or was that just a rumor?
No, that was absolutely real. I mean, you can, in the book, there's a whole section on exactly how that went down and the auditions and the submission tapes that were being sent up.
And the women were totally aware of this?
No, they thought they were auditioning for a movie.
Ah.
Now, it was basically to get a part in a Tom Cruise movie, but, you know, the questions that were being asked were a lot. I mean, the first round of auditions was on Scientology actresses.
Right.
So some of the questions being asked of them were, you know, what do you think about Tom Cruise, and where are you in Scientology on your counseling or your training? And, you know, there was a lot of other questions that might not necessarily pertain to a movie role in a new Tom Cruise movie. So,
okay, but let me ask you this. So they eventually went to non-Scientologists for him to choose from, but why couldn't he have just met someone, fallen in love, and married who he chose rather than, you know, kind of have this picked for him?
Yeah, I think that's a question you're going to have to ask him.
Is this just a case? We have so little time. Is this just a case of somebody trying to help him out? The church trying to help him out? He's having trouble meeting people, so it's like a blind date situation? Or is it more sinister than that? Hello?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, what? He's back. Whew. Sorry, we lost you for 1 second, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, I think it was more, you know, he was in David Miscavige's ear, who's the leader of Scientology, about his girlfriends or lack thereof. And David Miscavige was like, okay, well, you know, we're going to hook you up here. So,
okay. One more question, then we'll go to your phone calls for our guest, Mark Headley. Do you think Tom Cruise is being groomed to eventually take over in some sort of official capacity as the leader of the church?
No. I think he's a PR guy for them, and he's basically, you know, someone they can say, here's this big movie star guy, and he's in Scientology, so you should be too. So.
Okay. All right. Let's squeeze in a few calls for Mark. Again, the book is called Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. We got some great ones here. Let's start with Sherry. She is on line 6 on the Kevin and Bean Show. Sherry, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding on. You're on with Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering what Scientology's stance is on psychiatric drugs.
They love them.
Is 100% against any form of psychiatric treatment, drugs, anything that has to do with psychiatry. They are 100% against. They believe that the psychiatrists, when Xenu did his whole thing 75 million years ago, the psychiatrists were right there with him, and they are what they call whole track implanters, and they are the underlying source of all evil in the universe, psychiatrists. So.
Now, you mentioned Xenu. Bean and I have both known, you know, several people who are the Church of Scientology. Great people, kind, enthusiastic, not bad, mm-hmm. but most of them don't ever get to that level where you start talking about Xenu and the operating Thetan level, you know, 8 or whatever the highest is, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's probably a few $100,000 in. You learn about Xenu on operating Thetan level 3. So I'll be the first to agree with you. There's a ton of members of Scientology that are, you know, the greatest people you'll ever meet, and they're nice and friendly, and that's why I'm not talking to my book's not about those people. My
right.
book's not about
right.
what they believe in. My book is about the organization. So,
and by the way, that's another thing. When I was talking a few minutes ago about the differences between Scientology and some of the other religions, is that you don't have to pay to learn all there is to learn about Catholicism or Judaism, right? I mean, that's what makes this different, is that you really have to, you got to put a lot of cash in to get this material at the top.
Yeah. A lot of people ask me, what do I think? Is it a religion or a cult? And I say, it's a business. So, you know, whatever the philosophy is, that's fine. But when you charge people hundreds of thousands of dollars for information, and then when they do choose to leave, or they do, you know, contest something, or, you know, they have some kind of disagreement with the philosophy, then they're, you know, boom, they're out of there. And then that's where you have these people that are just damaged goods, because they've been broken up with their family. They've been, you know, they had to quit their job because they worked for a Scientology company, or, you know, they have never been able to speak to their children again because their children are involved in Scientology. Wow. And, you know, that's what these nice people that you know of, when things go wrong, you know, they're miserable.
Now, we don't have enough time for all these calls. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. But tell us about your drive to get people to come out and, you know, speak and do it publicly.
Well, the more and more people that have been coming out and telling these stories, a guy just in the last week started telling his story, and he is in Australia, and he worked in the Los Angeles facility, Scientology,
mm-hmm.
And all of the stuff that he's talking about parallels everything that's in this book. And there's probably another 1,000 people that have spoken out that have little stories here and there, and more people are starting to come out and say, yes, I witnessed this, this is what happened, and the fear of what the organization does to people is starting to wear off, or it's at least becoming not as evident. And yeah, more and more people. There's a website called Ex-Scientologists message board, or Why We Protest, and both of those have stories from people in every single country where Scientology exists about similar things that happened. People that tried to leave and they were recaptured, or people that weren't allowed to leave, or all these things. So I think the more people that come out and say what happened to them, the more things, at least, they're not going to be able to continue to do them, and they're going to have to, you know, right the wrongs that have been done. But, you know, the book explains how people get in, how people are stuck in, and then what happens when they try to get out. So,
and that book is called Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. It is available at Mark's website, blownforgood.com, which also Kevin Bean Show.
Thank you, guys.
And it's time to talk to an old friend of ours who we haven't spoken to in months.
It's been a few months, at
four
least.
Or 5 months. Yeah. Doto?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is you. Yeah.
We have been talking, it's almost about, since August.
Has it been that long?
Since August.
Yeah.
Well, you've been traveling around the world, haven't you, Do?
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah,
that's Ralph. That was Ralph. Yeah. Do's the international man of mystery. He travels with his parents, or dad, all around the world. You were teaching English for a while, is that correct?
No, I helped manage a school, Kevin.
Help manage a school, okay. Oh. We got some emails from you recently that were a little troubling.
Yeah.
Where have you been traveling recently, Doe?
Uh, wh- I was in Hong Kong, Kevin and Bean.
Okay.
And I was in China.
China, too.
I'm just looking for some opportunities. Just check with the old man.
What sort of opportunities are you looking for?
Import-export investments.
Yeah. Are you a secret agent?
Yeah, what is import-export investments? That sounds like a cover.
Mm-hmm. Everyone says that.
Are you carrying out missions for the government?
Nope.
Are you a hitman for the CIA?
Nope. Why would I do that, Kevin?
Because James Bond always said he was in the import-export business.
Right.
That's why I just thought you might be a secret agent.
Bean's on jury duty, right, Kevin?
He is, yes.
Try to stay with us here, though, okay? Try to follow along. But also, something that concerns us and makes us think you may be a secret agent is we got an interesting email from you.
Yeah, and it's written to Lightning. And before I read this, I'd just like you to know, Doe, that I've always been a fan of yours.
Yes, Kevin.
Lightning, not so much so.
Right.
Okay, but here's the email. Jay, it's Lightning's first name. I have a permit to carry a gun in the state of California. Just got a few months ago. Does that concern you?
Well, as long as you're responsible about it, it wouldn't be concerned. If you're irresponsible, then that would be an issue, Kevin.
Okay, but when you write an email to somebody and say, I got a permit to carry a gun, does that concern you? Is that a threat?
No, I don't think so.
Should he be concerned?
Nope.
Because if I were him, I would be concerned. If I were me, I would have nothing to worry about. But if I were Lightning, I think I would be concerned.
I don't think there's anything to be concerned about as long as I'm pretty mature about it. If I'm not mature about it, then there'll be a prop, Kevin.
Well, you're nothing not mature. We know that.
That's right. But how do we know if you're going to be mature about it or not?
Yeah, what if you get upset about something?
Well, at least, everybody, if I'm upset, at least I know how to control my temper or my anger.
But
Kevin.
No, you don't. You just killed a dude in Thailand or something, didn't you? Didn't you stalk a guy and then smash his head in?
Nope.
Then why would you write me an email detailing how you stalked a guy, waited at his house, and killed him by smashing his head in?
That was months ago, Kevin.
Well, it still counts.
We're not saying...
I don't care how long ago you murdered somebody. It still counts.
We're not saying it happened now. We're a little concerned. Because when you get an email detailing that, and then you changed your story and said, no, you were just exaggerating, and now you're carrying a gun, you have a license to carry a gun, you know...
We're a little worried.
If you had a gun the day you allegedly stalked the dude and hit him in the head, you know? Should we be scared?
Well... At this point, let's, Kevin being the bet, Kevin?
Yes.
Should you be scared? That's pretty subjective, Kevin, but at least I'm not going to do anything stupid. But why would I want to jeopardize my life, Kevin?
Well, we're just saying you've proven in the past that you have some problems controlling your temper. And if you have a firearm, that's a bad combination.
Dope.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Kevin.
Yeah, don't be sorry.
Not only did you write me a letter detailing how you killed someone, Doto, with your hands, but let's not forget that you ended up in prison in the Orient because of your fist fight, all stemming from your bad temper because someone was picking on you.
This was at the bar, Kevin and me.
But that doesn't change anything.
Yeah, I swear.
You have a gun now, and if you were in that situation with your firearm, what's to say you wouldn't use it?
Do you have a weapon, Doto?
Yeah.
You have a weapon.
Yeah.
Okay. What kind of weapon is it? A pistol?
Could be.
Okay.
Easy. Easy, mystery man.
And you say you're licensed.
It's like it's a permit, Lisa.
Yeah. How did you get a permit to carry a gun, by the way?
Well, I applied months ago, and you have to go through a long process.
Okay. And you went through the whole process, and they said, yes, this is the guy we
think
will
be. State of California said, yes.
Responsible.
We want Doto carrying a gun.
I know they're pretty rigid when it comes to granting license, Kevin.
But
right.
Don't you have to have some sort of reason, like you transport large sums of money, or there's some sort of safety factors where you have a legitimate reason to carry a concealed weapon?
Huh. I thought it was extremely
was
hard
question.
To get a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
Heard.
Extremely difficult.
Did they come back to you and say, yes, you can, or did you just move on?
They told me that we can, but we let you have it on a temporary being for the cease. Like a temporary permit, Kevin.
A temporary permit. Okay, so then you went out and got what type of weapon?
Do I have to disclose it, Kevin?
Well, no.
What difference does it make?
If it's not illegal, what difference does it make?
I'm not sure what's the name, Kevin. I have to check.
I think it's a .45 caliber, like you clearly wrote in another email.
How dangerous is a .45 caliber?
Very! If you don't know how dangerous it is, you shouldn't be carrying a weapon.
Doko, is it a concealed weapons permit?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't think it is. I don't think there's any way he
got a
concealed
weapon to carry,
permit.
That there's only one. That means you can conceal it on your body. That's what the weapon to permit to carry is.
You can go through the check process so that you can buy a gun.
Right. You can own one, right?
You can own one.
But a permit to carry is very different.
I don't think he has that. I don't believe him.
Do you have that, Doto?
Have what?
Permit to carry the gun.
So you say that getting a permit is pretty rare, Kevin?
It's almost impossible. I'm saying you have a license to own it, but you are not allowed to carry it on you.
So that's only granted to what type? So you said percentage is not likely, right?
Yeah, and it's not cross-eyed immigrants.
Oh, easy.
Hey, well, Psycho Mike, what's wrong with you?
He's not a citizen, and he has horrible vision, and he's trying to see.
And he has a weapon!
He's got a 45! What are you, nuts?
That's what I'm saying. Like, how does he think he's in
Be
the
nice.
He meets the criteria.
Psycho Mike at KRock.com, by the way, Doto.
What's he going to do, email him a bullet?
I'm just letting him know who's speaking.
Kevin?
Yes, yes.
I'll be going to Hong Kong in a couple of weeks, Kevin.
Okay. You're not allowed to take guns with
you. I know that, Lisa. Don't worry about that. I don't take anything.
You don't take the weapon with you?
Nope. Why would I know, Kevin?
Or maybe you should try to take it on a plane.
Come on, Ralph. Don't be nuts, Ralph.
That might
Ralph.
Be interesting.
Don't be Ralph. Nuts.
It'd be an interesting experiment to see if Doto could get away with it.
Doto, it seems like the only time you've ever needed something like a gun is when you're overseas.
Yeah, true.
That's when you get into trouble.
Well, look, I never have it overseas, Lisa.
Okay, Doto. I think
no answers here. A lot of questions.
I think here's our point. If we could just narrow it down to one thing.
Okay.
You shouldn't have a weapon.
Okay. That's all?
Yeah.
Well, I thought that the Second Amendment says that people can't have a gun, right?
Right. Yes.
People who have control of themselves.
In general, that's true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the people that have a weapon should have it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, it also says there's a right to free speech, but still, we have to watch what we say.
Yeah, I know that, Kevin.
On the radio, because we have responsibility to.
Yeah, we all know that, Ralph. FCC regulation.
Exactly.
Right.
So the Bill of Rights is not absolute. And we're saying
so the Bill of Rights is kind of a gray area, right, Ralph?
Not gray, but in this particular case, I think it's better if you just don't follow the whole Second Amendment.
Simple as that, right, Ralph?
For your own self, you know,
protection. Yeah. Sure. Right.
That's all.
Lightning, I met a Korean woman.
Okay.
Did you just say lightning? I met a Korean woman.
Yes, you did.
He's having conversations with other people,
but we haven't. Lightning's not in here.
Yeah, I know that, Ralph.
Kevin.
Okay. Okay.
Safe.
Seriously.
So you have a woman? Is she 5'8", 5'9"?
She's like about 5'7".
5'7". Oh, way too short.
Yeah, she's a stewardess, flight attendant.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Did you meet her at gunpoint?
No, I met her at the lounge in Korea.
Has she seen your weapon?
Nope.
That was a euphemism.
What do you mean by you have a girl? Like, I mean, are you keeping her?
In your trunk?
Or is she still in Korea?
When I was at the lounge, Kevin, I met her, I got her number, then
right.
She flies back and forth to L.A. So when she's in L.A.,
okay.
I went out with her a few times.
I see, okay. All right. We have a lot of phone calls on hold. We don't have time to put them on, but all of them are saying the same thing, which is basically you can't have a concealed permit unless you know the sheriff or some loophole.
It's very difficult to get.
Mm-hmm. So we're suggesting perhaps sell the weapon.
We'll get it, right, Kevin?
I just think in this particular case, you might be best to ignore the Second Amendment. See, Senorita?
Yes, Kevin.
Okay.
Or clean it vigorously with a round in the chamber. That's the other thing we're suggesting.
One or the other. All right, Doe, we got to run, but give up the weapon.
Tell Beat I need a babe.
Okay, well, our work is done here. So, you know, the people who love the animals, they are crazy people.
That's
a lot
me.
Of times. Yeah. PETA, crazy people. I mean, you know, they'll protect a cockroach and we'll lose 7 million American jobs because of this little area where the cockroach needs to be protected.
Well, cockroaches have a right to live, too.
They may go a little too far.
Sometimes.
But this is the first time I've ever seen someone go the opposite direction. And here's the story from the BBC.
They're cute and cuddly, but is that enough? This week, a BBC Nature host actually suggested pandas should be put out of their misery. He argues that pandas are an evolutionary dead end. They're not very bright, they're hopeless at reproduction in captivity, and they happen to live in the most populous country on the planet. So Packham asked, does the species really deserve to survive?
That's a little,
Wow, coming down on pandas?
What have they ever
done
to him?
That cannot be popular.
He's a BBC wildlife expert, Chris Packham.
Oh,
and,
my God.
We actually have him on the phone right now, so we can talk about this a little bit. Hey, Chris.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Now, this takes balls right here to come out and say, go ahead and let him die.
Well, I simply feel, I mean, obviously, I am an expert in wildlife.
Yeah.
Right.
And I believe that certain species, it is the evolution, an inevitability,
right,
that some species will eventually die out. It's the way things have been for millions and millions of years on the planet.
So you think we're interrupting that process? Absolutely. By forcing them to live?
Yes, that was my point. It's that if pandas, if they don't procreate, if they're not capable of sustaining their own species, then who are we to step in and insist that they continue to live?
Well, I mean, but part of the problem is that we have invaded their habitat, so it's partly our fault.
Yes, but we've given them ample opportunities in captivity to procreate, and they just will not F each other.
They're really not into having sex. They're too tired. They sleep 23 hours a day.
They are fat and lazy, and they are effing useless creature.
They're not helping their own cause to stay alive if they won't procreate.
Right, that's what I'm saying. We've given you a chance. We understand your habitat is being encroached upon. Boo-hoo-hoo. Yeah, right, okay, yeah. But here you go. It's a nice cage. There's plenty of bamboo to eat. Go at it. And no, they don't do it.
But
because they're fat and lazy and should be dead. And
maybe the cage is what's wrecking the mood.
Maybe the cage. Listen, if I wanted to get it on and I was in a subway station,
sure,
I would just knock it out.
Right.
That's what I would do. I would just, yeah, take it.
They don't seem interested.
No, they don't do that. They don't do that because they're fat and lazy and they should be dead.
Wow, it sounds like you have a personal vendetta here.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, it's because they're cute, right? Oh, look, Lizzie is wearing a little mask. Oh, the panda's so cute. Oh, it's cute. If he looked like Khloe Kardashian, then we would let the panda just die. But because they're cute, we spend millions and millions of pounds trying to keep them alive.
Well, it does seem like they're a unique animal.
Yeah.
There's nothing else like them.
I mean, they're pretty fascinating.
Oh, they're unique. Oh, look at them. They're just black and white bears. Oh, we have to have those. They're very special. No, they're just bears that are fat and lazy and should be dead.
Why do you hate?
I'm just saying that I know they're cute, but that's not enough of a reason to keep them alive and to spend all the money that several wildlife foundations spend in the hopes that eventually one will find out where the other's genitals are.
Yeah.
It's a long process, and frankly, they're too cute. I don't like cute all that much.
Oh, is that the problem?
Yeah, look at me. Ooh.
Too cute.
Oh, I just roll around. Look at me eating bamboo. Aren't I cute? No, not particularly. No, not Adam and oh.
What is that?
A kitten.
A kitten? What? Hey, hey!
Yeah, right, that's it.
What happened?
Yeah, there you go. What? How do you like that?
Did you shoot a kitten?
Yeah.
What?
How can you do that?
He was trying to eat my tuna fish. I have none of that, thank you.
But that's what he said. You're not much of a conservationist, are you?
Look, oh, yeah, well, we need a lot of cats around, don't we? Yeah, we got the new cat. Oh, freaking puppies.
No. Oh, come on. Hey, your kid. It took four shots to kill a puppy. That seems extraordinary.
It was a big puppy.
Dude, honestly, you got it. I don't think you're doing much for the animal cause. Perhaps you should go into another line of work.
Zoology may have been a poor choice for me.
This is very possible.
I always think about our relatively new Kansas and Iowa affiliates when we play a song like Sublime's Date Rape. People who may be hearing it for the first time ever thinking, that's what it's all about. That's what we get on the Kevin and Bean show, right?
Yeah.
How about Jeffrey Ross, ladies and gentlemen? How about the Roastmaster General joining us here on the Kevin and Bean show?
Yeah.
Jeff, how are you, my friend?
Feeling good, buddy. Thanks for having
me. Happy New Year, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Shana Tova.
Don't screw it up.
Tova Felshud.
Exactly.
What year are we? 5,000 and what?
This is 5,975. Wait, is that like Jerry Lewis telethon? I thought we were doing a tally.
Show me the tote board, Ed.
Yeah. I don't know.
Jeffrey Ross's book is in stores now. It is called I Only Roast the Ones I Love. He has been a publicity machine, and you basically have been like a hurricane going through some of these shows that don't usually have guys like you and leaving just damage behind.
Yeah, man. My fans were giving me crap on Twitter this morning because I'm on Bonnie Hunt. And I said, I'll shake it up anywhere. I'll get anybody canceled. I don't care.
I like Bonnie. She's a nice lady.
I do too.
She's awesome.
She's very funny too. What happened with you and Al Roker? I didn't see it, but I know you were on the Today Show a couple days ago.
I did put it up on my site because it's like the most killer. No one in the history of, and I don't, you know me, I'm not one, I'm usually self-deprecating. Mm-hmm. I'm usually all deprecating. But in this particular case, I thought Al Roker was going to have a heart attack right there on the air. I made him laugh so hard. If you watch the whole clip, it was like the Today Show clip of the week. By the end of the segment, he can't breathe. He can barely pick up my book to plug it. And he goes, the roast, he can't even say roast. I only roast the ones. He's wheezing. And wow. It was very gratifying because Al Roker loves the roast. He's been the roast master for the Matt Lauer roast. And I knew he would dig it, and I really creamed him.
You're lucky he didn't bust his stomach band. It could have been a danger.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think of that. Could have been the end
burst,
of him.
Burst his bypass.
Now, I didn't know if there was going to be I mean, the book covers Jeff's whole life. It starts out with, you know, him being a kid and getting into comedy and all that stuff. There's very funny stories. But predominantly you write about the roast because that's what you're best known for, and that's where you've made your mark. But I was wondering, before I saw the book, whether there was a book in that, because a lot of it is just watching you tell jokes. But the stories that you tell of the stuff that goes on and the reactions that people have afterwards, and of course you quote hundreds of great roast jokes from throughout the years too. It's so entertaining, Jeff. Oh. I didn't even think you were funny until I read this book.
and I didn't think it would. You know what it is? I see roasting as a philosophy, not just like, I don't know, a genre of comedy. I see it as the next like NASCAR or football. It's like a national pastime. You know, people are roasting in their backyards. They're having roasts in their office parties. And I figured if I laid it out for people, like the recipe for a good roast, it'll take over the world.
What's your history with roasting? Because I didn't know. Did you do it before the Comedy Central specials? Or was it something you had done before? Or did that come after it?
Oh, it was just something that happened as a happy accident. He knows by reading a book, everything in my life has been by accident. And I was wandering through the Friars Club one day. I got invited over there. And
which, for those who know, is a famous sort of comedians, show business, social club.
And I met Buddy Hackett. He came off the elevator, and I was getting on. And I said, "Mr. Hackett, I'm such a big fan. You're my parents' favorite comedian." And I shook his hand, and I said, "I just want to meet you." And he looked me in the eyes, and he said, "You know who hates farts the most? Midgets." And the elevator door opened up, and he walked off without saying anything else. And I was like, I love this stuff. And a couple weeks later, I got a call to roast Steven Seagal.
At the Friars Club?
Yeah. In front of like 1,200 people.
Wow.
I'm a nervous wreck. This is before you could YouTube and Google what the roasts were. They weren't on TV. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I just...
Yeah, the Friars Club is like a secret society. You always hear rumors of stories of things that happen that sound incredible, but there was never any proof and no one was ever willing to go on the record. So it's very different today.
Yeah, and it's sort of elevated now into this like super thing. And I know it has a lot of heart, as you found in the book. And
I did. And it's funny, by the way, because you mentioned Mr. Hackett here on the show, and many of our listeners may not even know who he is, but a legendary comedian for 50 years or something. Buddy. Mm-hmm. And he's the comedian's comedian. I mean, all comedians love Buddy Hackett. But, I mean, you're to the point where, you know, you wear his tie for luck. I mean, you just are, it seems like in the book, he's your personal god.
It's interesting. We were very, very tight. You know, it wasn't like a father-son mentoring relationship. He was like a big kid. And I was like a crabby old man. I had a bad back then, and you know, we just sort of hit it off like that, kindred spirits, if you will. And Buddy Hackett, if you ever met him, you'd know that comedy was like number 10 on the things he was an expert on. He knew about women and politics and religion and guns and food, and we'd sit in his backyard and feed the cats and talk about everything, pretty much.
Yeah.
He was great at writing jokes, too, the best. Some of my best jokes in the book, like, were late-night phone conversations with Buddy Hackett. One of the ones that comes to mind is we were roasting Jerry Stiller, and Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo had just put out Mystery Men, and they were on the dais. And Hackett gave me that joke on the phone. Gene Siskel was going to review that movie, but he took the easy way out.
Oh, wow.
Which is hilarious, but he had died that week. And I said, Hack, this is crazy. I can't say that. He goes, no, that's perfect. Right to the line.
So right to the line.
He showed me where the line was.
You write about so many of the famous roasts in the book, everybody from William Shatner to Bob Saget, which was hilarious. Flava Flav, I loved the chapter on the Hugh Hefner roast and the whole story you told about Gilbert Gottfried. It's so, so funny. But has there ever been anyone that after the roast you felt like did not take the material in the spirit of which it was intended, which was, you know, in a loving, positive way? Anyone ever really get bummed out about the roast?
Well, before I really had my philosophies on roasting set, I made some mistakes, and that all comes out in the book. But the one that jumps to mind is when you roast somebody who's not necessarily in the room, and that's when it gets tricky. By the way, I saw Kanye last night, and I got nervous because I made some awful jokes about him at the Joan Rivers roast. He wasn't there. And it went against my own rules, but the joke was so funny I had to do it. But maybe I shouldn't say it now.
Say it. Say it.
Well, if it's clean, say it.
You guys probably remember I was. And by the way, Kanye's a good sport. He has a sense of humor. And I said, I did all those million jokes about Joan Rivers' plastic surgery. I said, she looks like Michael Jackson's negative and stuff like that. And just ripping on her face and her plastic surgery. And finally, at the end of the whole run, I said, Kanye's mom had a better plastic surgeon.
Oh.
And then I spotted him last night at this Family Guy, Cleveland new show party.
Right.
And I definitely, this is not like me. I got very nervous and I avoided him. It's just not my style. But the only other time I really went too far like that was roasting Rob Reiner, the great director. I went up and I said, I don't even know how to do this. I mean, how do you roast Rob Reiner? How do you embarrass a guy who married Penny Marshall? What was your wedding song? How much is that doggy in the window?
Oh, man.
And, of course, a month later, I'm in Vegas roasting the Maloof brothers. They own the Palms Casino.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, this is it. And I'm up there, and suddenly, out of the crowd, Penny Marshall leaps to her feet and she starts shouting me down. You know, like the guy who was yelling at Obama, you know, like,
right.
you lie, you're awful, he's mean, don't listen to him. Like, she's totally, like, heckling me to pieces. And it's throwing me off a little bit, and out of the corner of my eye, I see she's coming towards the podium. She's coming out of the audience. I don't know if she's drunk, if she's just upset, I don't know what the deal, but she's kind of, like, wreaking havoc on my set. And she gets really close, like 10 feet away, and finally I just dropped it. I didn't know how to get rid of her, so I just said, which one were you again, Lenny or Squiggy? And it sat her down, and I lived to see another roast.
Wow.
But, you know, you have to be careful.
Great stories. The book is called I Only Roast the Ones I Love. Jeffrey Ross is the author. He's here with us. By the way, you can meet Jeff. He's doing an in-store. He's doing them all over the country, but tonight is in Los Angeles at the Westwood Border Store.
Tomorrow night,
tomorrow night, starting at 7 o'clock. Now, I understand from following your tweets that you are going to be signing the first, 10 in blood, right?
So Abe Pagoda's blood. Abe Pagoda's blood.
Oh, Abe Pagoda's blood. So that is a bonus. That's tomorrow
still
night.
Alive, by the way, Abe Pagoda. He's still alive. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Still
people are always alive. Shocked by
he
that.
He needs
they?
To die.
Yeah, I think it's time for him to change his Facebook status to resting in peace.
The book is awesome. We'll take a quick break. Hang on right there, Jeff, and we'll return right after this on The Kevin and Bean. By the way, we world premiered the brand new song from Foo Fighters earlier today. It is called Wheels. We will play that one again for you before the end of the show. Also, we have the host of The Amazing Race, Phil Keegan, coming in. And I think we're going to catch up with our friend Seth Green, who must be on hard times or something because he's promoting Butterfingers candy bars. That's why Seth's calling
because they're delicious.
They're the best.
Oh, yeah. I love Butterfingers.
I miss the BBs. Remember the BBs?
Yes.
Oh, Butterfinger BBs.
God, those are awesome.
I used to take them rectally.
In the meantime, Jeffrey Ross is here. He is the Roastmaster General, of course. His new book is in stores called I Only Roast the Ones I Love. Get your copy signed in Abe Vigoda's blood tomorrow at the Borders in Westwood at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. So many great stories. I don't even know in our time remaining. I got to tell you, there was stuff that I thought I knew about that you fleshed out for me in the telling in the book, which is why I'm glad that I read it. I mean, I knew about you and Cousin Sal with the feud. Uh-huh. You have told us that story on the air a couple times before, the short version of which is that he texted you on Elimination Night when you were on Dancing with the Stars and told you you were safe, and you totally believed it right up until the last minute of the show. It was one of the great burns of all time, but it really resulted in an actual fracture between you and Sal's friendship, right?
Right, correct.
What I didn't know, which I found fascinating, was how the story was resolved and how you guys are friends. I didn't know any of that until I read it in the book.
People wouldn't believe me. I had to put a picture in it for people to really believe that the story is true of me and Tom Cruise.
Quick recap for those who don't know the story. Sal. You were on Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
And it was elimination night. And you were concerned?
Sal texted me. Yeah, I knew I was. I got a 12. You know, I got like the lowest score in the show's history. You know, I always say Heather Mills, when her leg flew off, she got a higher score. When Christopher Reeve did a wheelie in season one and fell out of his chair, he got a higher score. So I get eliminated, and I think I'm going to be safe, and I get eliminated, and, you know, it was heartbreaking. And, you know, Cousin Sal works at Jimmy's show.
Right.
You know, I figured I was good. They told me I was safe. Right?
He texted you and says you're good.
And Buddy Hackett used to say, turn your phone off an hour before the show. Concentrate on the show. I left my phone on. Sal texted me, and I totally hook, line, and sinker. Months
and your whole family's there in the audience. It's a huge night for you.
They're all wearing eye patches in solidarity.
Right.
They got, you know, and it's big. I've been practicing a month and a half this ridiculous routine in a tuxedo and an ascot with an eye patch. And you know, 23 million people are watching, and I think I'm going to be safe and dance. And I get eliminated, and it's heartbreaking, and they play the video of me, my jaw dropping, on Kimmel that night, and they just mock me relentlessly for, you know, believing them. And getting eliminated and having the worst performance in Dancing with the Stars history. Months goes by.
And you were cheesed off? Were you actually cheesed off at Sal?
Yeah. He tells me I'm safe and I'm eliminated. And I didn't prepare a speech at the end. I was just like, hama, hama, hama. You know, completely caught with my pants pulled down.
Right.
And, you know, Sal was just jealous because there's no show called Dancing with the Cousins of the Stars. Months goes by, and we're not talking. And I'm hardly going up to Jimmy's house for Sunday football. I'm avoiding Sal. Sal's avoiding me. We tried to reconcile a couple times, but we couldn't even agree to disagree. It was just getting ugly every time. I felt like I was getting ganged up on, and my feelings were hurt. And even if I'm being a wuss, you still apologize because that's what friends do.
Right. Yeah, and he wouldn't even make that small concession to your feelings. He was basically standing firm on, I'm a dick and I love it, basically, right?
Exactly, and he would tell everybody who would listen that he would do it 100 times over because the prank was that funny. And this is a guy who's tortured me many times. I mean, let's not forget, he pushed me in the pool in Adam Carolla's wedding. He wrote all the punchlines to my jokes on my Porsche one year.
Wow, you guys have history.
Oh, yeah, well, we shared an office together at the Man Show and became very close. And anytime he'd ever messed with me, I'd forgiven him. Sometimes it took a while, but I'd always forgiven him. You know, one thing, another Buddy Hackett-ism was... you know, you should always never hold a grudge, because while you're holding a grudge, the other guy's out dancing. Mm-hmm. So it couldn't be more appropriate for this case.
Right.
So finally I suck it up and I go up to Jimmy's house to see what he's making on Sunday. It's Sunday football. You know, he's like practically a chef.
Yeah.
And there's Sal. You know, he's kind of nervous and fidgety, and I'm a little like put off by it. But there's some tension in the room, and it's not really loving yet, and it's awkward. And out of the blue, Tom Cruise walks in the house. Don't ask me how or why.
I don't have any stories that have that sentence in them.
But, you know, at this point, I'm done sort of being surprised at anything that Kimmel can pull off, because here he is. Tom Cruise walks in with his mom and a big box of homemade cupcakes.
Oh, my God. So, in what world?
At this point, I'm Uncle Frank grabs me by the arm. He drags me over. Hey, Tom, meet my favorite comedian, Jeff Ross. And I'm shaking Tom Cruise's hand, and he remembers me from the Matt Lauer roast we mentioned earlier. Tom Cruise did a surprise cameo.
Right.
He showed up uninvited and just ripped the roof off the place, eviscerated Matt Lauer. It was completely hilarious. And so now here's this, like, superstar in Jimmy's kitchen eating cupcakes and chicken parmesan and whatever else is cooking on the stove. And Sal sits down next to me for the first time in months, and he whispers in my ear, he goes, why don't we let Top Gun decide who's right? And I'm thinking about it. I go, well, here's a guy, Tom Cruise. He's played so many righteous lawyers. He's going to rule in my favor. Plus, he has on the dais experience. So he'll be able to differentiate right and wrong between making somebody to their making fun of somebody to their face, like we do at the roast, and pranking somebody behind their back, like Sal did to me.
Right.
Our friend Sarah Silverman gets up on the table, a coffee table, makes a big speech laying out the entire thing. She decides she's going to be moderate. And she lays out both cases very fairly. And within minutes, it becomes this big brouhaha with yelling, screaming, tears, laughter, the whole thing. Tom Cruise is taking it all in like some sort of like metaphysical rabbi or something. He's just absorbing all this information.
He's the Judge Wapner of comedy now.
He's really relishing his role as sort of this mediator. It was really interesting to see. Like, I think he was getting a kick out of it. And at one point, we were arguing back and forth, and Sarah said to Tom's mother, what do you think of all this, Mrs. Cruise? And she just looked at me and Sal, and she said, I think the two of you are acting like little boys. She winds up getting the biggest laugh of the whole day. And after about an hour of back and forth and a very emotional powwow, ridiculous but emotional, Tom Cruise said, listen, he stood up, he leaned over, and he said, Sal, you've hurt your buddy's feelings, and I think you should apologize. And it was just like, there it was, you know, and Sal got all, you know, suddenly he was like dumbstruck and starstruck at the same time. Sal has never apologized. This is starting a slippery slope for Sal. But it took him about four tries to apologize. He just couldn't do it straight up and sincere. And Tom Cruise kept interrupting him and said, no, Sal, no disclaimers, no nothing. Just apologize to your buddy. And finally, Sal said he was sorry. And we hugged, and the picture's in the book. And I got to thank Tom Cruise for
saving your friendship.
Saving our friendship. And more importantly, setting Sal on a path to being a full-fledged human being.
Is that a beautiful story?
I mean,
come on.
Happy ending. A roast master never holds a grudge.
And that is one of many fascinating stories of the book. I didn't know about that one, and it was I enjoyed it the hell out of it. The book is called I Only Roast the Ones I Love. It is available everywhere. You got to pick it up if you love Jeff's work. It's very, very funny.
That's
you
nice.
Can meet Jeff at the Borders in Westwood at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. I'm sorry we're out of time, but you're going down to see the troops. Please give Kent Pendleton our love and thank him for their service. I know that the troops love you, and you do so much for them. So it's awesome that you're going down
there
today.
It's a partnership. I love those guys.
Yeah. Jeff, you're welcome every time, man. Thanks for coming on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Thank you, guys.
You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. By the way, if you love Muse and you missed our breakfast with Muse, you can check it out on the website. It's all there for you at kevinandbean.com.
Megan Fox, oh Megan Fox, big bulgy things are gonna happen, and by that I mean a
All right, thank you very much, Joe. Listen, here's the thing. Megan Fox is the hottest chick in the world, period. And I don't care about people who try to say she's snotty or she's bratty or she's got a weird thumb. She's the hottest chick in the world, period. I've never been able to interview Megan Fox. We've never had Megan Fox on the show.
Yeah.
Dave the King of Mexico is practically having a relationship with her at this point. They were back at it again last night.
When did you interview her the first time for that exhaustive interview?
The Transformers premiere. Transformers
2. Yeah. Okay. And here's how that went.
Megan, I just want to say one question. Hello.
All right.
Now, I would think that you're done at that point. Like, everything that can possibly be said has been said. Yet, you apparently had more for Miss Fox last night on the red carpet of the
sure
new film
did.
Opening tomorrow called Jennifer's Body.
Yep. We were in New York, by the way, just by way of setup. And I said to Dave, if you have any stones, mm-hmm. and this is when congressman yelled, you lie at the president.
Oh, yeah.
I said, if you have stones, you'll ask Megan Fox any question. It doesn't matter what. And as soon as she starts answering, you'll lean in and yell, you lie! I was trying to talk him into doing that. He did it, sort of.
What? He did?
Sort of. I'm going to play for you now part two of the King of Mexico standing with Megan Fox having a conversation.
Wow.
Which in itself is not acceptable.
You're right.
Here it does
go.
Seem like matter and antimatter, like those two things shouldn't be able to exist in the same universe. How can Dave and Megan be within 6 feet of each other?
And by the way, last time he said, I just want to ask one question, hello, and we mocked him endlessly. This time, an actual conversation.
Hi, Megan. It's Dave, the King of Mexico, for the Kevin and Bean Show. uh-oh.
Yeah, uh-oh.
Why uh-oh?
Okay, so she responds to that with uh-oh.
Interesting.
That's not what you want.
Is that a good sign?
No.
Why would she say
that? Why would she have any reason to not be thrilled that her boyfriend Dave is there?
Dave the Kevin and Bean, or does she remember you?
Dave Kevin and Bean.
Dave, the world's best interviewer, follows up with, wait a minute, why uh-oh?
I've heard about you guys. I used to listen to you guys before you started talking about me so much, and then I couldn't take it. I can't listen anymore. I'm embarrassed.
Talking good or talking bad?
Well, I tuned out when you were still talking good. I hope that that still happens over there.
Here's what I like about Dave. He offers up that we talk bad.
Yeah. Thanks, Kate.
Talking good or talking bad? Was it, well, all those bad things we said about you? She didn't even know about them.
Gotta stay true, man. No lie.
No. You don't have to stay true. If Megan Fox thinks we're saying good things about her, you let Megan Fox think we're saying good things about her, which, by the way, we are, because we love her.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
We don't really say bad things much.
Why would Dave say good things or bad things?
I was thinking it could have been she thought that we were saying bad things, and I was about to defend us and say never.
But Dave, when your girlfriend comes in and says, "How are you, honey?" You don't say, "Why are you asking that? Because of the lipstick on my collar?" I mean, you don't offer up, "Hey, check out the mistake I might have made."
You don't say it if they don't know it.
Whatever.
Are you talking about the time I spent in prison? What were those commercials? Remember those?
Right, exactly.
All right.
What a way out?
So, King of Mexico, Megan Fox.
Talking good or talking bad?
Well, I tuned out when you were still talking good. I hope that that still happens over there at the Kevin and Bean Show.
Well, that continues. The last time I talked to you was at the Transformers 2 premiere. And I don't know if you remember, but I had one question for you, and that was hi.
I do remember that.
Well, I got crucified for it. Because everyone had to ask you the questions, and here I am, lucky enough to ask them, and I say hi, and that's it, and then you walk away. So
here's what I like, though. Dave did that because he didn't know what to say, and he's retarded. Now, all right. Of a sudden, it's his elaborate plan, and he's got all these theories about how everybody else asks her all these in-depth asking questions, and he thought he would zag when everybody else was zigging.
This is no game game.
Once again, did anyone else get a kiss from her that night? No, just this guy. Just this guy.
But I want you to admit,
I want you to admit, after the first interview, you thought, what a disaster.
Damn, come on.
I knew it was gold. It was like, I just needed to cash it in somewhere. I couldn't wait for you guys to get back.
No, he didn't know it was gold.
I couldn't wait.
Dave, you knew that you froze last time you had Megan Fox in front of you. You had the opportunity to have a conversation like this one that we're hearing now, and you didn't because you didn't have the
chance. It wasn't a plan.
It was all planned out.
It wasn't. You were lame. All right, so now he's established who he is. He's talked to her before. Kevin and Bean Show, she used to listen. We'd say too many things about her, blah, blah, blah.
A lot of setup.
This is where it all goes south.
Uh-oh.
Because now Dave the King of Mexico decides, I'm going to talk to the hottest woman in the world about stuff I like. Not about the movie, not about Jennifer's body, about various things.
You have her undivided attention at this point.
Dave, am interested in things, so I'm going to ask Megan about my things.
Okay.
I gotta redeem myself today. So here are my questions. Being from Tennessee, are you as big of a fan of Paramore as I am?
Okay, so King of Mexico loves Paramore. That's his first question to her.
Well said, by the way.
Because she has it is.
All the time, him.
Is Paramore from Tennessee?
Franklin.
Okay, I didn't know that. I do actually like Paramore. I play that frickin' Twilight soundtrack over and over again on my iPod. Yeah, she's really talented. She has an amazing voice. I like her. I didn't know she was from Tennessee.
All right, so.
Boom, yeah!
Question one down.
Okay.
Man, a bit of a connection here almost.
Yeah.
But it's a. He got lucky because it's a terrible question.
But at least it was
terrible.
But it was asked poorly.
Yeah, that's going for
it. It gets better.
It does get better if you're Dave. It gets worse if you're us because Dave continues to focus only on things Dave cares about.
Very much so, from Tennessee. Now, are you a baseball fan at all?
Okay. Are you a baseball fan?
No, I'm not.
No, I'm not.
Okay, then move on.
What's your next question?
Right.
All right, so how do you think the Dodgers are going to do in the World Series?
They're going to go all the way, baby.
Yeah! So he Blue!
So Dodgers! Listen, if you're going to ask about the Dodgers, don't ask if she's a baseball fan, because the answer could possibly be no.
Right.
And then you're a jackass for moving on to the Dodgers. All right, now
how is the follow-up to "Are you a baseball fan?" No, a question about baseball, Dave.
Because I didn't really care what her answer was going to be. The question was coming out.
Right, so I just asked the question.
Yeah, I don't care.
Oh,
okay. That's how I do it on the red carpet, yo.
Shut up,
I don't
Dave.
Care, man. I'll do it. I'm crazy.
So then you think he's done asking her?
I'm uncomfortable with this.
Asking right Megan Fox about stuff Dave cares about?
All right, and how do you think the Clippers are going to do in the NBA?
All right, I am going to bend you over right now
and
kick you right where it counts.
Dave, people who follow basketball don't care what the Clippers are doing
she
this year.
Even know who they are.
But you know who cares about the Clippers? This guy.
Right,
but you're talking to Megan Fox.
Yeah, I just want to introduce her.
At the very least, you could ask her about an NBA team.
Play the clip.
Just play the clip. All right, and how do you think the Clippers are going to do in the NBA?
I think the Lakers have got the Clippers.
How about that? Mr. Clippers fan, what do you think about that?
She's wrong.
You lie!
Okay, that's where he worked it in, Bean.
Okay, so this is cringe-worthy.
Okay, so he's talking about the Clippers after the... She's not a baseball fan question. And then there's an uncomfortable silence, and that's when Dave decides to semi-shout, you lie.
I want to play that again.
All right, and how do you think the Clippers are going to do in the NBA?
I think the Lakers have got the Clippers.
You lie!
I lied? I'm sorry, I lied.
Just say Clippers.
The Clippers are going to take it.
Thank you. You have made my day, and that was my exclusive hard-hitting interview with Megan Fox, and we only say good things about you, and the Kevin and Bean Show loves you.
I love the Kevin and Bean Show.
Please continue to listen.
Okay, I will.
Thank you, Megan.
So there you go.
Wow.
Okay. Woo!
Conversation.
That was awkward.
So he asked her about, let me just recap, Paramore, right. Okay, which he loves,
yes.
Dodgers, which she clearly doesn't even watch baseball or like it, because he asked her that first, and then Clippers, and she gave him an answer to that question, and he made her change it.
Yes.
I'm just so grateful that they ended it there, because you know his next question was going to be about turtlenecks, right? You know that's where he was headed.
It was all Dave questions all the time.
We need to keep him away from hot chicks.
No, guys, I would like to think me and Megan Fox are now friends.
I would like to think that as well. It's not true.
And you could see us tonight at the Blink-182 show.
Hey, Ralph, what's going on?
Rest in peace, Peaceways. Patrick Swayze.
Oh, Peaceways.
Peaceways?
I couldn't figure out what you were talking about.
I'm glad he died before he heard that.
He was the man, and he fought valiantly against pancreatic cancer for 2 years before he passed this week, and he has left behind a rich legacy of cinematic work, the most of which, however, in my opinion, has to be Roadhouse.
One of the best movies ever. Time for Ralph's Video Vault.
It's last call. For action,
yeah,
says the poster of Roadhouse. Roadhouse, the classic film starring Patrick Swayze, where he plays the king of the coolers. That's right. Dalton. Dalton's the man you hire when you've got a club that is just out of control. The
He's
kind of club, as they say in the movie, where you're sweeping up the eyeballs at the end of the night.
Does that happen?
In some clubs, yes.
All right. They hire a new bouncer to make the place tamer? That's what they do?
Not a bouncer, Bean.
It's a cooler.
The cooler's the guy who runs the bouncers. The cooler's the guy who runs the entire floor of the bar to make sure that things stay copacetic. Stay safe for the patrons. That's how you get the people in. That's how you make your money. And the owner of the Double Deuce in Joplin, Kansas knows this. That's why he goes out and gets himself the best cooler in the business. The most famous cooler in the world. Sure, some may argue it might be Wade Garrett. But no, it's Wade's protege, Dalton. And you know he's cool because he's got one name, Dalton. We never know any more about him than that. And so the owner of the Double Deuce hires Patrick Swayze as Dalton to come take a look at the Double Deuce, see if he can clean things up for him. And the minute Dalton walks in one night to look around and see what he's dealing with, people start to recognize him because he is the most famous cooler in the world, including this young barmaid.
You got a name?
Yeah.
Well, what is it?
Dalton.
Oh, my God. I heard of you.
Yeah, she's heard of Dalton.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, I heard of you. Everyone's heard of Dalton. And when he comes to town, people start a-talking. I'll tell you, the guys who work as the bouncer there now, and they're all low-lifes, the guys who are working there now, sure. They're selling drugs in the back, they're banging the girls who come in, they're letting the underage girls into the bar, taking money from the till, lining their pockets with the proceeds of the Double Deuce.
Dalton's got his hands full.
Dalton needs to clean this place up, and how? And I'll tell you, one of the bouncers needs to know more about Dalton. So he asks his old friend, who happens to be the guy who is the bar band at the Double Deuce, who is Jeff Healy, mm-hmm. the blind guitarist.
Right.
And so...
Of course he is.
Well, he really is.
Sure.
Jeff Healy's literally a blind guitarist.
All right.
And he plays Cody, the blind guitarist of the Double Deuce. And so the bouncer's, prodding Cody to get some information.
This Dalton character, what's his story?
Story is, you f*** with him and he'll seal your fate.
That's right. You F with him, he'll seal your fate.
It's true. You don't want to F with him.
Yeah. So Dalton takes over the Double Deuce and starts to weed out the malcontents from the staff and gives the other guys who are sticking around, his crew of bouncers, his rules, how things are supposed to work. And the rule number one when you work for Dalton is to be nice.
Okay.
I want you to be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Well, how are we supposed to know when that is?
You won't. I'll let you know. You are the bouncers, I am the cooler. All you have to do is watch my back and each other's. Take out the trash.
Yeah! Time to take out the trash!
So you're supposed to be cool until it's time to not be cool.
Be nice.
Nice.
Until I tell you not to be
There's
nice.
A difference.
There is a difference, All my right. friend.
All right.
Now here's the problem about the little town of Joplin. It is run by the sadistic evil millionaire, Brad Wesley. He calls the shots in Joplin.
All right.
He runs the booze distributor there. He owns the mall there in Joplin. He says what goes.
Okay.
And he's also taken 10% from all the businesses in Joplin.
Uh-oh.
Everybody who owns a business has to pay a little something-something to Brad Wesley. He's got to wet his beak from your income, or else things don't go so well for you. Accidents happen. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so the problem is... Dalton starts to make some changes in this town, starts to upset some people, and things go poorly for him one night, and he gets stabbed in a fight in the bar. So he's got to go to the local hospital, which is where he runs into the impossibly tan Dr. Elizabeth Clay, played by Kelly Lynch, who is just smoking hot. Beautiful blonde hair, bright blue eyes, and impossibly tan. The kind of tan you could only get in the 80s. I don't know what it was about the sun in the 80s. It must have been stronger back then because everyone was really tan. And she has to fix him up. He's got a big knife wound in his chest that needs to be stitched up. Now, usually, as we see in the beginning of the film, Dalton does his own stitching.
He stitches himself.
Yeah, when he gets cut, he gets a needle and thread, and then he sews himself up.
Sure.
But because of where it is, he can't reach it. He's got to go to the emergency room. And so he brings his medical records with him.
Right.
And so Dr. Elizabeth Clay, the impossibly tan Dr. Elizabeth Clay,
sure.
is looking through his records there and realizes this guy's got a lot of injuries. It's a rough business Dalton's in. And she's going to add to it because she's going to staple him up with some staples there.
All right.
Well, Mr. Dalton, you may add 9 staples to your dossier of 31 broken bones, 2 bullet wounds, 9 puncture wounds, and 4 stainless steel screws. That's an estimate, of course. I'll give you a local.
No, thank you.
Do you enjoy pain?
Pain don't hurt.
That's right.
There it is. There it is.
Pain
right
don't
there.
Hurt.
Isn't that the definition of pain?
That is one of the best lines in any movie ever.
Pain don't hurt.
Pain don't hurt.
He doesn't need it because pain don't hurt. Not to Dalton.
He must not be very good at his job if he gets hurt that much.
You have no idea what he has to go through.
Bean.
You have no idea.
You don't understand Dalton.
What he has to put up with. Now, the thing is, Dalton becomes friends with Red. Red is the guy who runs the local automotive store in town.
Okay.
Because Dalton is constantly getting his tires slashed and his windshield busted in because people don't like the way he throws them out of the bar.
Mm.
So the drunken rowdies trash his car. So he makes almost daily visits to Red's auto shop. And the thing is, Red has decided he's not going to pay evil millionaire Brad Wesley his 10% anymore. He's not going to do it.
Wow.
And they come in and they rough up Red's shop. And Dalton is a little cheesed off for his buddy Red.
So what does he take?
Who?
Brad Wesley.
10% to start. Oh, it's all legal-like. He formed the Jasper Improvement Society. All the businesses in town belong to it.
Everybody pay?
Does a hobby horse have a wooden...
Yes, it does.
I can't answer that.
Hobby horse does have a wooden...
It does.
It does.
All right.
So everyone there in... Jasper is the name of the city. And so Brad realizes that... This new guy in town, Dalton, is starting to rile up a lot of the business owners into saying they're not going to pay this guy.
Uh-oh.
And so they need to have a face-to-face.
Is it on?
It's on.
Mm-hmm.
And so Brad Wesley brings Dalton in to try to buy him off. You think that's going to work with Dalton? You think that's going to happen?
Pain don't hurt.
Let's see what happens.
Tell me, if I owned a bar and wanted to clean it up, how much would it take to get you to come work for me? There's no amount of money.
No, he's not going for it.
Wow.
No, he's taking a stand. Well, needless to say, Dalton starts to see the impossibly tanned Dr. Elizabeth Clay socially.
Right.
They go out on a date.
Does he try to figure out how she gets so tanned?
That's right. That's one of the things he wants to figure out. And so they spend their first night together with Dalton having sex with her up against a stone wall, which I found romantic.
Okay.
And painful, it must have been for her. She probably needed some stitches and some staples by the end of that date.
Sure.
It turns out Brad Wesley, evil millionaire, used to go out with Dr. Elizabeth Clay.
Oh, no.
So now he has really cheesed off evil millionaire Brad Wesley.
Now it really is on.
And he starts doing some horrible things, not only to the townspeople of Jasper, but also to Dalton, including killing his best friend, former king of the coolers, Wade Garrett, who comes to town to help him. And so it is really on. And it really gets worse when evil millionaire Brad Wesley brings in his own kung fu expert, because that's how Dalton makes his moves. He's got the kung fu going for him.
Okay.
He brings in Jimmy, the evil kung fu expert.
Jimmy.
And we know they're going to have a face-off at some point during the film.
Jimmy, to me, does not say kung fu.
Oh, Jimmy's scary.
Okay.
And when they finally square off, Jimmy starts off the fight with maybe the scariest thing ever said in movies.
Prepare to die. You are such an asshole.
Prepare to die.
Wow.
Does that scare Dalton? I don't think so. Let me tell you something about Dalton. Dalton once killed a man in Memphis, Tennessee by ripping his throat out. Yeah,
dude.
That's right.
Wow.
Man put a gun to his head. Dalton had no choice. It was self-defense. Had to rip his throat out.
How do you choose that?
Because that's what he's got. He's got the kung fu moves.
Right.
This movie's got everything, Kevin. It's got an evil monster truck. That sadistic millionaire Brad Wesley drives around in.
Sure, is it black?
It's got kung fu.
Mm-hmm.
It's got mullets.
Right.
It's got babes and big hair. It's got bar fights. And it's got a dude ripping another dude's throat out. Well, during the fight, Jimmy, who, as I mentioned, is the evil kung fu expert,
right,
throws some trash talk at Dalton, which may be the best insult ever during a fight. I would suggest you use this if you ever get into a fight.
I used to f*** guys like you in prison.
Yeah, in case you missed that, it's I used to F guys like you in prison.
Dude.
That's how tough Jimmy is. He's outing himself. He's admitting his own jail time homosexuality. That's what a tough guy he is. And things are going pretty poorly in that fight until Jimmy pulls out a gun because he's a coward.
Oh, no, he
You know what happens when you pull a gun on Dalton?
What?
He rips your throat out. That's what happens to Jimmy.
Should have seen that coming.
And then Dalton sends Jimmy's lifeless corpse floating back across the lake to Brad Wesley's house. Well, now all hell breaks loose. Brad Wesley goes nuts. He starts driving his monster truck in through the local Ford dealership because the guy won't give him his 10%. He blows up the guy who has got the horse ranch. He blows up his house. And Dalton knows the only way to stop Brad Wesley is to go to his house and confront him. And he's pounding Brad Wesley in the face, and he's taking him on. And Brad Wesley pulls a gun on him.
No, he didn't.
And you know what happens when you pull a gun on Dalton?
No.
He rips your throat out. I've told you three times already.
That's right. He rips your throat out.
But this time, he doesn't do it. Because the last time, when he ripped out Jimmy's throat, impossibly tanned Dr. Elizabeth Clay, she thought he was a madman. She turned his back on him. She stopped dating him because she thought he was too violent.
Oh, no.
So he chooses not to rip out evil millionaire Brad Wesley's throat.
Okay. So he can date impossibly tanned doctor?
Right. But Brad Wesley still has a gun on him.
Right.
And it looks like he's going to kill our hero, Dalton.
Does he?
No. Because you know who shows up at the very end? All the townspeople of Jasper. And turns out they've all got some shotguns.
Oh.
And it turns out that Dalton has given them the courage to face up to evil millionaire Brad Wesley on their own.
So enough is enough, finally.
Enough is enough, and it looks like the people of Jasper take matters into their own hands.
This is our town, and don't you forget it.
So long, evil millionaire Brad Wesley. People of Jasper have taken their town back. And it looks like Dalton's going to put down some roots. He has been pretty much
a fly-by-night guy up to this point. He's been a vagrant, a drifter.
A drifter, yeah.
But no, now he's going to put down some roots, and he and possibly 10 Dr. Elizabeth Clay are going to settle down and form themselves a life.
And possibly 10 little kids.
That's right.
It's a happy ending.
It's a happy ending. Oh, Patrick, oh, you will be missed. But at least we'll always have Roadhouse. Let's close that door to that vault, shall we?
Coming up in the next hour, we have one of the most brilliant guys in TV, honestly, Seth MacFarlane, who created sure. Family Guy and American Dad. The season premieres are coming up this Sunday, and we're going to talk to Seth coming up very soon. I'm very excited about that.
He got a $100 million contract, by the way, his most recent signing. $100 million. So he's
not enough.
for the entertainment that he's bringing the
right.
world. Guys, I got some bad news. You know, we've been following with sadness the health struggles of rapper Nate Dogg, who's, you know, one of the great Long Beach rappers. He's working, you know, with Dr. Dre and with Snoop Dogg for many, many years. Seems like a super good dude. Only 39 years old, by the way. Had his first stroke last December, ended up paralyzed on the left side. Was really fighting his way back. I mean, this is a guy who was making a real comeback until this week, and apparently he has suffered another stroke.
I'm sorry to
say. I saw an interview yesterday from his cousin, Little Half Dead, who said that...
I'm sorry, wait a minute. What's his cousin's name?
Little Half Dead?
Little Half Dead? That's the best name ever.
He was talking to allhiphop.com and confirmed that Nate Dogg had a second stroke and is in pretty serious condition. But, of course, we wish him the very best.
Wait a minute. Are we taking information now from Little Half Dead?
Yes, we are.
He's the only spokesperson they can get?
It seems like he would know. I mean, the guy, he's related. He's related to Nate Dogg. But anyway, we wanted to find out how Nate is doing, so we asked producer Alex to line him up. And I believe we have him on the phone making a return appearance on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock this morning. Good morning, Nate.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
Fine.
I'm glad
to
hear
it.
You're fine? Okay, good.
Yeah.
This is, you got to have the positive attitude, of course, but wow, what a bummer to have another stroke less than a year after the first one when you were making such good progress.
Got full wrong, don't follow me with dusting full purpose. And this woman,
I'm sorry, I didn't get any of that.
I'm Nate
Dogg?
I'm sorry, I don't know.
What happened?
I had no stroke.
Oh.
What I said was, God does everything for a purpose.
God does everything for a purpose? I didn't get that, but God does everything for a purpose. I got
smoke weed every day.
That's what I hear, yeah.
That's what you're there for. Now, obviously, you need to concentrate on your health. That's the most important thing, but... Are you able to stay involved with music at all during this difficult time?
Oh, yeah, dog. It's easier for me to sing than it is for me to talk.
Oh, it's easier to sing than talk.
All day I'm singing songs. I got hoes. different area.
Nate?
Sorry. Okay.
Pick up the phone.
What happened?
Stroke.
Another stroke.
I'm sorry. Too much hot sauce and fried chicken.
Well, that's the other thing that Little Half Dead reported in this article is that is your poor diet and unhealthy lifestyle that contributed to your health difficulties.
Whoop, whoop.
Hey, Nate, is Little Half Dead a credible source for us to be taking our information from?
He's a real G from Long Beach, 213%.
Represent.
Okay.
I've been remaking some of my hits.
Oh, that's what you're singing?
To try and... get back on the charts.
Oh, I see. Okay.
With Dr. Dre and
Warren G?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's much easier to understand you when you sing than it is when you talk.
Crystal clear.
Okay. I have a couple songs here. Which ones are these songs?
This one's
Is what?
Regulators.
Okay, all right.
Hit it, Steve.
That's sad. That's, come on. That's sad.
Hey,
you don't put Dick Clark on TV on New Year's. You don't let Nate Dogg sing. Come on.
Hey, Nate.
Yeah. Good, don't it?
Well, I'm not sure that you're clearer when you sing than when you talk.
Listen to this next bomb track.
Okay, what's the next bomb track called?
Ain't
no fun?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where is it last night?
Come on. I would let the original stand.
That's not an improvement. That's enough. Stop that.
Sounded good. K-Rock is KROQ, and it is the Kevin and Bean Cinco de la Tarde. You are listening for a Rise Against song, Ready to Fall, for tickets to both nights of K-Rock's Almost Acoustic Christmas in the Pit and backstage passes for both nights.
And if you missed the announcement this morning on the Kevin and Bean Morning Show, then you missed the details of how you can buy your tickets about 72 hours from right now. 5 o'clock on Thursday is when tickets for night number 1 go on sale, and then 6 o'clock, 1 hour later on Thursday, is when night number 2. All those details at KROQ.com. Online only, you do have to be a street team member. It's a miracle that I am here this afternoon. It's a miracle that I didn't quit this f***ing job after the job that I had to do on Saturday night at home, guys.
Aww. You found it.
I read an article that there was a show on Animal Planet Saturday night called Dancing with Dogs. That is exactly what you think. It's a Dancing with the Stars, except instead of with two people, you have somebody dancing with his dog, or I should say with her dog. That's the show. I didn't know it was going to be 2 hours of the crazy, first of all. And I also didn't know how much I would want to drive to Rhode Island and kill every one of them and their pets.
I saw the show.
They did it like the Olympics, where they give you the stories of everyone.
Well, of course, they have to do that to fill 2 hours.
I know.
Wow. And, of course, Lisa watched it voluntarily, by the way.
Nice. I did. I watched all the Animal See, that's Planet. Why they make it!
Dancing with Dogs. Here's how the show began.
Grace. Agility.
Come on.
Style.
Now, you're out already at
Shut
this point.
Up.
Right?
This is almost good.
This is Musical Canine Freestyle, a sport where dog and handler move as one.
It's not a sport.
It's a sport, Bean.
Can I just say that on behalf of the people who are screaming at the radio right now? Yeah. It's not a sport.
Precision, artistry, and athleticism. A discipline that evolved from a small idea into an international phenomenon.
It is an international phenomenon that none of us had ever heard of until Friday, right?
Right.
This is
at stake today, the coveted Animal Planet Cup. For most, it has been a long, hard road of training and dedication leading here. The International Freestyle Competition. Who can bring the dazzle, the pizzazz, the showmanship? The stage is set. The goal is clear. It's time to dance with the dogs.
By the way, the Animal Planet Cup looks like a punch bowl. I mean, there's no money, there's no cash.
It's the coveted.
There's no prize associated with that. It's just a punch bowl. That's all you get. I guess you feed your dog at it or something.
I think you can snap.
We're up and running in a hotel in Rhode Island, and we meet our host, who, and by the way, the only thing that can make this show more annoying is if you get us a gay Asian dude to do funny skits while he is hosting the show. And the show opens with him in his dressing room, realizing he has an important phone call to make to his dog.
Alec, 1 minute.
Oh, 1 minute. Oh, thanks. Hey, Shelly, are you there? Pick up.
Okay, he's talking to his dog on the phone, right?
Yes.
And then they show his dog reacting to his voice in the room.
Oh,
Alec Mappa. I really wanted to talk to you before I went on the air.
I'm hosting Dancing with Dogs. Just promise me you'll watch a show.
Okay? We're about to start.
Okay, I gotta go. Bye.
The dog runs over to the remote control and turns on the TV and starts watching the show.
Do you tell your dog your name is Alec Mappa?
Yes, you tell him. You gotta tell him first and last name.
It's like dad or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Your host for Dancing with Dogs. Today, in this ring, we will see the creme de la creme of collies that conga and shelties that swing, all in competition for the ultimate prize, the Animal Planet Cup.
Right, the Fruit Punch Bowl. I don't know if I can even hear any more of it now.
Wow.
Here's a little bit more about how Dancing with Dogs works in person, in the arena, and then we'll meet our first contestant.
Founded in 1999, the World Canine Freestyle Organization has now grown to over 20 chapters in 17 countries. And their ultimate goal? To one day see musical canine freestyle become an Olympic sport.
Yes! Yep!
May I remind you that baseball is not an Olympic sport. This guy wants Dancing with the Dogs to be in the Olympics.
I'm in love with this show.
There are plenty of ways, of course, for you and your pet to be disqualified.
But competitors have to be careful, sure, as there are plenty of ways to lose points and even be disqualified. Handlers cannot use food or toys to bait the dog during the routine.
Okay, by the way, this might be an outstanding time to point that the humans are the ones who force their poor, battered, abused animals into the ring for Dancing with the Dogs. None of the dogs want to be there.
Of course
and
not.
And everything that they get penalized for is something that the dog would enjoy. Heaven forbid you give him food or toys. That would make the dog happy. Let's throw him out for that.
At no time during the performance can any part of the dog's body leave the ring, even if by accident.
What if the dog is smart and wants to leave because he's too embarrassed to be appearing in Dancing with the Dogs?
I hate humans. I'm out.
Exactly.
And speaking of accidents, if the dog happens to commit a foul, he is disqualified.
Okay. Now,
foul?
A foul is exactly what you would expect. And they had, I swear to God, you guys, I'm not kidding about this on the Animal Planet. They had a close-up of a Newfoundland. You guys know what those dogs are? They weigh like 150 pounds. They're huge dogs.
Yeah, like a mini horse kind of.
Yes, yes. They had a close-up of a Newfoundland taking the biggest, steamiest, nuttiest, high-def dump you've ever seen on television.
That is no way to live.
Why they had to show that, I can't imagine, but they did.
Because it was a foul, Bean. Did they throw a flag?
God, why did I have to see that?
Is there a replay challenge?
Come on. Let's meet our first contestant, shall we?
My name's Carrie Neri. I live in Salem, Connecticut, and I am going to be competing with Callaway, who's a five-year-old miniature Australian Shepherd. Callaway is a Frisbee dog, and he'd much rather do Frisbee than dance, so I try to throw in a lot of my Frisbee moves without the Frisbee for Callaway.
Okay, why not just play Frisbee with your dog instead of forcing him to dance?
How about don't have him dance?
How about
ahead of time that he hates it.
Exactly. That's the point. This is just like the people who dress up their pets. They do it for them. They don't care how much the dog hates it. It's exactly the case with Callaway.
I think his favorite move is jumping through my leg. As far as,
By the way, that's the only thing that's jumping through her legs. All of these women are old and just dried up prunes who can't get a man, and they have no family, and they have no friends, and they just put all of their time in their stupid dogs and their dancing.
As far as, people in freestyle, I'm kind of out there and flashy and the wild child. For my costumes, yeah, sometimes I'm a little bit out there. I prefer to dance in sequins and spandex.
Sure you
Maybe
do.
When I'm in my 60s and I'm doing freestyle, I might not want to wear it. But right now, that's what I like. It's just fun for everybody.
Nope. She ended up going on the show, by the way, in an outfit that involved a cape. Okay? She actually wore a cape where she cut out like little paw prints and put
this
it on
the cape.
This
keeps getting better.
All right, we only have time for one more clip, and I think this is, again, representative of the kind of people who enter Dancing with the Dogs at Animal Planet Saturday night. Let's meet this woman.
When I tell people that I dance with my dogs, they pretty much think that I'm nuts. You dance with your dog, like how the waltz, the rumba, So I think they pretty much have to be shown what it is, and then you have to be impressed when you see it.
Nope.
It's just wonderful.
Nope.
And my dogs and I have never been closer. I'll never give it up.
Okay, she and her dogs have never been closer. This is the last clip we'll play from Dancing with the Dogs. I want you to see what happens when she goes out into the arena with her pooch to compete.
Right now, we have Chico and Diana Frohman. Oh, I'm loving the shimmer on that vest.
They're for sure in the running for the Animal Planet Cup. However, Chico likes to self-choreograph, so Diana never knows what he's going to do next.
All right, music starts. Dog looks around and makes a run for it.
To sequence. Oh, there seems to be a lot of confusion right now. All right, well, let's go to commercial. And when we come back, we'll find out if Chico has indeed been disqualified.
Chico,
stay with us.
Has never been happier to be disqualified or anything in his life because he got away from that bag that was making him dance.
Chico has left
the
building.
Chico's the smartest guy in the room. He left. The rest of us are stuck behind watching the freaking Dancing with the Dogs.
That might be the best show ever.
You. Do I want the OCD? Tell me what I'm getting myself into if you say yes. What
do you want it? No. You
do
don't
I want
it?
The OCD?
No.
It seems like it's kind of neat.
What's neat about OCD?
Well, I don't know. Tell me what show you've been watching here. What's going
it's
on?
It's called Obsessed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's on A&E. And here are a few clips, and then you can tell me if this is what you want.
There are no carpets in my house. After I use a towel, I have to throw in the wash. Everything's color-coded. It has to be on the same white hanger. There are no trash cans in my house. I take every single piece of trash outside and throw it in the receptacle. Including hand sanitizer, I wash my hands 30 times a day. I want relief from this so badly. It's affected having successful relationships, and I just want to be all around free from this so that I can take all that waste to brain power and put it into just living a happy life.
Doesn't seem fun.
Wow. No.
I'm not interested in anything that's either time or labor intensive.
Right.
So I'm going to have to pass on OCD.
Because you can't. I don't think you have a choice, by the way, of passing. I don't think somebody brings it up to you and says, would you like this? They just seem to get it. And it's weird because some of them don't have it. And then, like, maybe a tragedy happens. You know, you lose a parent or something. And then
they
start keeping stuff. Yeah, it's really
And
just,
there's no, I mean, I'm sure they all go to therapists.
They have therapists
and
on the show, yeah, that try to work through it with them. Here's another one.
I have a form of OCD that manifests itself as cluttering. I hold on to a lot of things because I think they might be valuable. My memory, probably like a lot of people's, is very associative, so I'll see something, it becomes a visual cue. I remember what I was doing at that time, and I don't want to get rid of them.
Mike, you said that guy has, like, stuff out in his front yard?
The city ordinance had to come in and talk to the guy because the clutter was billowing out into his front yard.
Well, like, if you can't throw anything away.
Practically exploding out of his house. That's how bad it was.
So he's just the opposite of the last guy who has to take every item outside to the trash. He doesn't even have an inside trash can.
My God.
Then why isn't there a reality show where you force those two to live together?
That's what I'm talking about. We could call it the odd couple.
I was watching, it's funny, I haven't seen this Obsessed TV show, but I was watching the movie Mumford last night. It was on the cable. And one of the people, this is the story of a psychologist who works in this small town, and one of the people is a hoarder. And her family is taking this psychiatrist or psychologist, whichever he was, through the house, and every single room in the house was floor to ceiling with boxes of stuff that she had ordered. You know, ordered online or bought in the store. 99% of it wasn't even opened. It was just stuff that she had to have, yet then had no place to put it and didn't use it. It was bizarre.
We'd like to talk to you if you have OCD. And if you're really emotional about it, maybe we're not the guys to trust with that. But
I know you're not the guys to trust with that.
Because we find it kind of funny, if you don't mind. So we would like you to call us up. Here's one last clip.
I'm most obsessed with hands. My mom's and my brother's hands. Their hands are hidden. I'm completely fine. Or if they're touching something hard, that doesn't bother me. It's only when their hands are just loose. I'm obsessed with my mom's K-sound, too.
Okay, just so you can understand that, because it took me a couple of times of listening. She's obsessed with how her mom makes the K sound.
Huh.
So if she says kitchen, she needs to do this to make it better for her.
Whatever makes you comfortable, Nicole. When my mom says the K sound, I can't stand that. I have to make up for it and go until it feels right.
And her name is Nicole.
And she's got a K sound in her name. Wow.
It's a good thing that that's not, you know, that I didn't have a kid like that, because I would spend my whole day saying the K sound.
Well, what I guess we can ask some of the people that call us, and we are going to take your calls, 1-800-520-1067. What causes this? I mean, some people are born with it, and some people get it later in life, you're saying?
It's like a panic disorder, I think. I think it's one of the panic disorders that you can get. But
fascinating.
People have to – you know, we talked to a guy yesterday when we were talking about the singles party who has – and this is the only thing he says he does, but he has to roll around – clockwise in his bed three times before he goes.
No. Counterclockwise.
Sorry, counterclockwise.
Clockwise, he can't sleep. Freaks him out.
So he goes counterclockwise three times, and then he can go to sleep.
I wonder if he goes the wrong way, then he has to go the other way twice as many times.
Don't know how that works.
All of these people need to live together in a house on a show.
Yes, they do. It should be the Obsessed show.
The one show that has not happened
yet. That would
be
great. The OCD house.
Do a Big Brother OCD edition.
That would be awesome.
It would be fascinating.
So we're going to take your calls. We already have a lot of people. You might be surprised. On hold. 1-800-520-1067. And we'll talk to you next.
The television show is called Obsessed. What network has this one? I got to start watching this.
A&E.
A&E has Obsessed. Talking about people with the OCD. We've got plenty of those people in our audience listening to the Kevin and Bean Show this morning. 1-800-520-1067. Who do you want to start with?
Start with John.
Okay.
John is 24. John, have you had this your whole life, this OCD?
This is Santa Monica!
Yes. Well, it's been a long time.
It's been way too long.
That's so awesome.
Well done.
That's a private joke on us, for those of you that didn't understand that, and we find it very funny. All right.
Let's talk to, we didn't get John. Let's try Juan. He's on line four on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Juan, you got the OCD, you lucky bastard?
What it do, nephew? You have OCD?
Hello.
My OCD is not like life-altering, but it's pretty weird, and everyone tells me how weird I am. It's numbers.
Numbers, okay.
I listen to the radio, and I turn the volume up or down. It has to end on an even number. If I, like, go out with my friends and we're drinking, I have to have an even number of shots or beers.
So if you have three shots, you go, I can't stop there. I need to have four.
Exactly. Or if, like, I'm already hammered and I've had six, they're like, oh, I have another one. I'm like, no, man, I can't, because then I have to have two.
Then I have to have two
more. Like, I have to chew food an even number of times. It's like weird.
You count how many times you chew food?
It happens. I just...
Wow.
It's just even number of stuff.
Have you had this your whole life?
I had it when I was younger, and I think when I went to the Marines, it just made it that much worse because they're so, like, scrupulous about cleaning and like so on you and strict.
Sure, like clockwork, yeah.
Hey Juan, can you only watch Channel 2 and Channel 4? I mean, like, it would freak you out to watch 5, 7, 9, right?
You know, I had a hard time accepting the fact that I love listening to 106.7.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
at least you have 10 is 10 and you have 6, though. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Is it difficult to be 25 years old?
It was a rough adjustment.
Like, at the end of this year, he's going to breathe a huge sigh of relief when he turns 26 and he's safe for, like, another year. That's fantastic, Juan. Thank you so much for calling.
Are you trying to get help?
Go on.
No, like I said, it doesn't really affect my life, but it's just something weird. Like, I'm OCD in that.
When you want a woman, you'll start getting help. All right, thank you, Juan.
Let's go to Cindy on line 7. I think she's going to tell us about her being naked. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hi.
You have OCD?
Yeah, a little.
Is it a lot of different things or just one?
It's just one.
Okay.
It's when I take a shower, my husband either has to be in the shower with me.
All right.
Really?
Or be in the bathroom, because if I'm by myself, I constantly open the shower curtain, and I always have to look outside, and I do this about 20 times if I'm by myself.
What, you think somebody might come in and hurt you?
I don't know what it is. I've only been doing this for 2 years.
Well, I think we could only help you really in person with this problem.
Well, a webcam would be a good start, too. I know this sounds like a stupid question, but did you see the movie Psycho, and that's, you know, something like that or something in another horror movie that made you afraid of the bathroom?
That's funny, because my therapist asked me the same thing, and I said, no, it's nothing like that.
Well, then it has to be something like that. I mean, you're obviously scared that bad things will happen.
Yeah. It's some kind of fear like that.
Okay.
Huh. Right. Weird. Wow. Hey, just because you keep looking doesn't mean somebody still can't get into you, though. You know that, right?
I mean,
I mean, in the time after you look and then you close the curtain again, it is possible that somebody's coming right through the window with a big knife.
Not helpful. That is
I'm
not
just
helpful.
Trying to help. Just trying to keep it in perspective for you. Good luck with that. Thank you for the call, Cindy.
All right, Cindy. Let's go to Mo. Mo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going, Lisa May?
Good.
You have OCD in just one area or many?
No, I have a couple things I do.
All right, what are they?
If I have a sandwich, just like a regular sandwich, sandwich bread, I have to finish it in 9 bites.
Oh, you have to finish the sandwich in
Yeah, I can't do it in 6 or 7. It just has to be in 9 bites. And if I'm having chips with it at the same time, I have to finish the chips when I finish my last bite. I can't have chips left over if my sandwich is done.
Okay, but can you eat as many chips as you want while you're pacing yourself through the 9 bites?
Yeah, as long as I'm done at the same time, then I'm good.
What do you think that's from?
I don't know. Being fat, I don't know.
and what do you think would happen if you had chips left after the sandwich? What do you think the result would be?
I'd probably just throw them away, but it's never happened to a point where like I have leftover ones. I just got to finish them.
What else do you have?
I'm constantly just counting in my hand, using my hand. Like if I'm holding my girlfriend's hand, she's felt me just counting, like, you know, I'll be pushing against her hand with my fingers, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, for no reason.
You're not counting something specific. You're just counting.
Yeah, just randomly, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Or say you tell me, like, how are you doing? Or how are you? That's 1, 2, 3, 4 syllables. How are you? 3. I'll make it to my, like, in my head so it's, like, 5 or 10. Like, how are you today? Okay, cool. Like, in my head, I'll count, like, till 5.
It has
like,
to be 5 or 10 or you feel off?
Yeah, it's just, it would be, like, weird. So I'll just, like, constantly do that in my head. And I constantly get gas at Arco, and they charge you 45 cents.
Right.
So
say I'm, like, at 1944, I have to make it so I reach 1955. So when I get my bank account, it'll be in even, like, $20 or whatever.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow, so you're a number, you're a Rain Man, you're a number freak.
Yeah, I'm like Bean now, great.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I have Asperger's.
thank you, Mark.
By the way, thank you for the call. I do not have the OCD any more than I have the Asperger's, but I will tell you that I have a similar thing going on with the numbers, not just at the gas pump. Like when I leave a tip, I always have to leave a tip so that the amount is an even dollar amount when I leave at a restaurant.
So if your bill is like $18.95, you don't just add $3?
Right. I had $3.05, right. Oh. Drives Donna crazy, but for some reason, I don't know why, I feel like I have to do that. But I think I would survive if I didn't. I think I could do it. I'm not like some of these people who
why
would freak out.
Why don't you try it?
Because it is my, well, let's not be crazy. All right. We really only have time
Asperger's
for...
Asperger's and OCD.
I'm not either one of those.
Right.
Of course.
We
only have time for one. Do we even have time for one more?
Not
do we
really,
have to save this for another day? Let's save it for another day because we have to revisit this topic because apparently our listeners are honked the F up and we love them for it. But we need more time to be able to explore the beauty that is your OCD.
You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show on the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, a major announcement that you will want to be a part of.
I'm opening hailing frequencies. Help me. I need your assistance.
Roland?
Hey, Roland.
This is Captain James T. Roland of the Starship Basement.
Roland, what are you
alert.
Doing?
Red alert.
What's wrong?
Red alert.
What?
Roland, why do you have your own Star Trek sound effects CD?
I'm currently sitting in my exact replica of the shuttlecraft Galileo in my basement.
Okay.
I need your assistance. I rarely ask anything of you. And now
Except
I need your assistance.
Every time you call.
But now I need something, and it's very important.
Okay. What's going on?
I've just found out that Star Trek The Experience at the Hilton in Las Vegas is closing.
Yeah.
Thank God. It's about time.
Ah! After 11 years, they're going to close it on September 1st. This cannot happen.
But haven't you had enough opportunity in 11 years to go see that BS?
I go twice a month.
Twice a month?
Yeah. I've gone twice a month for 11 years. I was there for the opening of the Klingon Encounter ride. I was there for the Borg Invasion 4D. I was there for the Secrets Unveiled backstage tour in 2005. And I've gone twice a month ever since.
Wow.
And this, so you've and seen it then. So you're done with it.
They can't close it. It's the closest replica to the Bridge of the Enterprise near my home.
Well, I don't know a lot about this story, but I think they already made the decision, didn't they?
But they can unmake it just as quickly as they made it.
But
I need your help. We need to go to Vegas. We need to strap photon torpedoes to our chest and threaten to detonate them unless they change their minds.
I'm not sure that's the route we want to go.
You don't want to. No. Roland, you don't want to threaten to blow up a building. No. Listen, where's the Star Trek Experience? It's at the Hilton or something?
Las Vegas Hilton in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay. Now, aren't they making the decision to close it because not enough people go anymore? It's the time has passed.
No, the time is now. First of all, it has not passed. And they're closing it because I believe the people who run the Hilton are under the influence of the Borg. Or the Romulans. They want to close the Starfleet facility there.
Don't you think, though, that we're living in an age where people are interested in the Batman and they're interested in the Iron Man and the Transformers? They've kind of moved on past the 1960s Star Trek a little bit.
First of all, can't we all get along? Can't we live in a world where all of those things are very important to all of us? And secondly, they're making a new Star Trek movie. J.J. Abrams is recreating the original franchise.
That's true.
So it's going to be more popular than ever. Keep the doors
not.
Open.
Mm-hmm.
Keep
the
doors
not.
Open.
It's going to be a buffet September 2nd. Sorry, Roland.
I had plans to get married there.
To who?
Go to Vegas, get married on the bridge of the Enterprise. They let you do that there.
Right, but to who?
Somebody.
You don't think? They can't guarantee to keep it open for the rest of your life in case you happen to get married, Roland.
I'm going to get married.
To who?
Somebody.
When?
Someday.
How do you know that somebody will have you?
Just the odds have to be in my favor. Every day there are new women being born.
Right, right.
So eventually, sometime, someplace, I'm going to run across one of them.
Right, but you're sitting in your parents' basement in a replica of the bridge of the Starship Enterprise.
First of all, it's a replica of the shuttlecraft Galileo 7.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
I couldn't fit the Enterprise bridge in my basement, so I had to go with the shuttlecraft.
But I think Bean's point is, how many women are you going to meet there?
All right. Maybe I could expand my social circles.
A little.
That's what we're suggesting.
But
that's
I
all.
But when I do, I need to get married in Vegas.
All right. Roland, I think I appreciate your passion, but the call has come too late. The decision has been made. It is going to close in 2 weeks. I'm sorry.
Oh, poor guy.
Roland. Roland, it's okay.
What's happening?
Con!
He's yelling con!
Oh, this is bad.
We're trying to get Omar to turn down the sound effect.
No, it sounds good.
I want a cat's groups, too. I'm going to play Tostic event.
Huh?
She literally discovered this band I'm about to play.
Right.
Uh-huh. They're called the Airborne Tostic event.
Oh.
The album just came out.
I don't think that's...
An Airborne Tostic event.
It's not Tostic.
On K-Rock.
Okay.
Why can't
you say that, Roddy?
It's the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock 106.7 K-Rock. Now, let me try it. It's the Airborne Tostic event. Yeah. Joining us in the studio here on the world-famous K-Rock. Actually, the whole band is here, plus a string section, but just in the studio right now is Mikkel and Steven. Good morning, you guys. Welcome.
That's right.
Good
morning.
Good morning. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
really rad.
We couldn't be bigger fans of your record. Kat turned us on to the EP months and months and months ago, and we've just been, like everybody else, waiting for the album to come out. And it finally came out last week, and it's tremendous.
Oh, thank
tremendous.
You so much. Thank you. We've been feeding your 20s for, like, weeks.
Yeah, well, it's paid off. It's paid off.
Oh,
she's a whore that way, the Kat.
Oh, wow.
She'll take money, yeah. A lot of people don't know that. You guys are so interesting for a number of reasons, one of which is we talked to so many bands over the years here at K-Rock who... really, like, No Doubt is a perfect example. Yeah, guys, we played every asshole gig you can imagine for 15 years before we get anyone to even listen to a demo. And then you guys come along, and I don't mean any offense by this, but it seems like it happened pretty quickly for y'all from the time you guys got together to the time, you know, where you're doing the stuff that you're doing now.
Yeah, it's been a pretty quick ride. We feel fairly fortunate about that.
Tell us, I know you've told this story a thousand times, but tell the people who aren't familiar with your band kind of the background of how you came together and how you got out there. There are a lot of bands that are trying desperately to get noticed. And
oh, yeah. Like I said, feed 20s to Kat.
Okay.
And God bless the internet, I guess, would be
the internet, right?
Hurt
to have a good-looking Asian guitarist.
Oh, thank you.
like Southeast Asia, he gets half profits in the whole territory. We just
sweet.
All right, so good-looking Asian guitarist.
Yeah. Okay. Make a note here in case we want to start a band.
That's number one.
All right. Now, MySpace kind of had to be where it all began for you because that's where you first got heard, right?
Yeah. We had a page that we put up, and then some kids got a hold of it in England, actually, first, and they started sending it to their friends, and then we were like, whoa, this internet thing really works.
Yeah,
series of tubes.
One of the things about MySpace is you can act like such a bigger band than you are early on because you can just put yourself out there.
Did
and
we
like,
do that, though? We didn't. I used to respond to fans like, hey, it's just
oh, this. No. I mean, but you can look like, you know, just appearances.
Oh, they
like,
don't
yeah,
care.
Yeah.
Like kids in like Budapest, they don't care if
they don't know
local,
the difference.
They don't know. They just hear your recordings and they think, you know, what have you.
Yeah.
So I'd written a bunch of music and I'd gone through some dark times and then I decided like to start a band and all these jokers were just like friends.
Didn't you
friends
like move to Tibet or something? Yeah. Trying to write a novel or what?
Really?
What
well,
happened
not
with
Tibet.
You?
I was living Where in was the it? High desert on this ranch. I was a ranch hand. And I used to
on
shovel.
Purpose.
Yeah, I got for room and board. I had to shovel horse manure for 3 hours a day, and then spent the rest.
Welcome
of time.
To my life, by the way.
That's a unique way to get started.
Bean, you're into that kind of stuff.
He
right?
is. Yeah, he loves that.
That's what I do. Yeah. Half an hour after every Kevin and Bean show ends, I'm literally shoveling manure. And hey, you know what? I think I prefer that it. To this.
Yeah. So. I got news for you. You're shoveling manure all through our show as well. Okay, so you're on the high desert.
Yeah,
you're shoveling manure.
I'm shoveling manure. I'm reading a lot of books. And you know, and trying to write one, and it's excruciatingly boring to do that. I don't know if you've ever tried to write
Very
a book.
Very lonely. Yeah.
It's lonely and it's horrible. It's not yeah. fun. Yeah. Playing music
And
is
you
fun.
Realize you suck, too. You realize it's
yeah,
hard.
I was like, God, man, I'm terrible at this.
I'm learning more and more about this time that you spent out there.
Oh,
like,
didn't
I didn't
that?
Know you shoveled manure.
Then. Oh, yeah, man.
Oh,
and
man.
There was like a monk that took me under his. It's like Remo Williams. You ever see that? Where yeah. he has to like jump on the things and. I'm kidding. Stephen gave me this look.
I don't know,
you are an idiot.
So you had never written a song before that time? That's
no,
when you got
I
interested
had.
In music? Is after the novel?
I'd written songs. I'd been in bands when I was younger. But okay. I was always the guy who was writing all the music, and I couldn't really, I didn't really think I could sing. So I'd write all the music for the band.
Let someone else sing?
Okay. Yeah, and then someone else would kind of sing. And then, I don't know, yeah, I just started writing songs. I was sick of writing this book, and I just was like, you know.
So you were still shoveling manure, and then you started writing songs, or you said, this sucks, I'm going back home?
I actually left the ranch, yeah. you know, and went back to, moved to Los Feliz and started, and I was writing there for a long time. I was like a writer, that's what I did. And then I went back to the novel, I quit everything that I was doing with writing, and then I went through a bunch of stuff, like my mom got sick, and I got diagnosed with this genetic autoimmune disorder, and then... my girlfriend broke up with me, and I quit
dude,
smoking. And,
you're a downer,
dude. It was,
you know,
it wasn't very fun. I gotta say. And then I don't know, man. I just started writing songs, and I didn't really plan to start a band. It just kind of happened that way. It just sort of, I spent like a year in the room with a guitar playing for like my neighbor's cat.
A year, so you like 7-8 hours a day? Kind
oh,
of thing?
Like 8 hours a day for a wow. year, just singing songs and writing songs and trying to do stuff. And then, I mean, I had no ambition to be a musician. I wanted to be a writer. That was like my goal. I wanted to be a novelist.
Did you write for the LA Times or something?
I wrote some pieces for LA Times. I wrote some pieces. I was on like NPR. You know those guys that come on yeah. and go like, "Hey, what's the deal with blue ties? How come they're always saving me or whatever?" You know, I was like one of those guys.
Okay,
I had some
so-
fiction published. You know, I did a lot of different things.
How'd you find your bandmates? Did you put an ad in the paper or something? Or
They're
was it just people you'd run into at clubs?
Outside of my house. And I was like, hey, okay. check it out. Weird.
Need a good-looking Asian guitarist.
Yeah,
put an ad in
the... Weird. If you put LA that Weekly. On MySpace, how many people respond?
I mean, was there a casting call to find other
no,
musicians for you to play with? Or
friends.
Were
you... I met Darren through a friend, and then I met... Noah was friends with my friend Chris. Steven and I had actually been friends for like 5 years.
Yeah, I used to live in San Francisco. Mikkel was up there, and we didn't even know each other as musicians. We were just both like...
Steven's a writer, too. Steven's writing a novel also, by
Is
the
that
way.
Right? Wow.
Good
not,
for you. Yeah, that's what we do in the tour van. We just we discuss literature, and we write
no,
novels.
No, we totally don't.
Sure. The quietest tour van ever.
It's really
All right,
boring.
So you all get together, and then you think, well, I got some songs, and then the other guy says, I got some ideas. Then you record it kind of at home, or did you
Yeah,
go into
well,
a big
so
studio
the
to do it.
Demo at my house, and then we put it on the internets, and then
the internets,
yeah, all of them, and they it just kind of we sent them to some blogs. You know, I guess we were savvy enough to know that there's these things called blogs, and they write about music and the local blogs. Radio Free Silver Lake and You Set the Scene and Rock Insider, all these people were writing about it like really early on, and we were stoked. And so by the time we played our first show, you know, it had already been online and stuff, and people totally showed up, and we were like, what the?
For your first show, that's
yeah.
awesome.
It was surprising. They really cared. They
like
were,
a lot
yeah.
of our friends didn't even come.
Nice.
And they were like, was anybody there after the show? We were like, yeah, man, you weren't.
All right, I'm going to ask
really
a question I don't think I've ever asked a band before, and forgive me if it seems awkward. I'm not sure how to phrase
oh, this
it.
Is going to go well, I'm sure.
Yeah, no,
I'm going to try it, though, because I really do. I love the sound. I love the sound so much on this record. I mean, it really is one of my favorite records of the year.
Oh, thank
did you
me.
Have an idea of what you wanted to sound like? I mean, did you guys sit down and go, what kind of a band do we want to be? Or was it just this is what came out once you started playing together?
No, this is just kind of what came out from our live show. I'd written about 100 songs, and then from that, maybe the band played about 40. And we have a whole set that could just be punk songs. We have a whole set that probably sound like Talking Heads. Yeah. Maybe a whole other set that sounds like this.
So you just size up the crowd and then pick the playlist?
Well, more like we've been playing for like a year, and we just wanted to capture what we were doing live on the record. So the record's all live. It's all live takes. A lot of those are just first takes. You know,
Beyonce no kidding.
Spend like 2 years. Wow. We don't know what they do. We're like, the mics were plugged in, right?
Yeah, it shouldn't take that long, right?
And we just basically did our thing. We were trying to capture our live thing, and that was sort of our goal.
Yeah, I didn't realize that we were just going to do that one take, and then I later on I was like, wow, maybe I should have
tried.
Yeah,
should have tried harder.
Yeah, how, we had to overdub all of his guitar parts.
Really? Oh, that's too bad.
It's awkward that I have to tell you now, Steven, yeah, sure. In front of all these people. But, yeah.
How did you end up with Anna and the violin? Because some young bands would go, well, that's going to sound a little pretentious coming out of the gate with a freaking string section.
Oh, we were going for pretentious, man. No, that was
you were, okay.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. Anna could play a lot of stuff. Actually, I met Anna out. We hadn't been friends for a while, but I met her out at Tacos at this place called El Gran Burrito in Santa Monica, Vermont. And
that's where all the classic musicians hang out.
Yeah, totally. And there's fights there all the time. I love that place, man. You get arroz con leche and you know have a warm cup of rice milk and hang out and eat tacos. She was there. That was like 2 in the morning. We were both drunk. I shouldn't say that. My mom hates when I say my mom's listening. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, Mom.
He doesn't drink. When he says drunk, he means
he's like, don't tell
he means,
people.
He means drugs.
I don't know why she sounds like that. That's how she sounds in my head. She doesn't actually sound like that.
That's too bad.
So Anna was out there, and I was like, hey, don't you play like violin and viola and stuff? She was like, yeah. And then so she was just going to play on a few songs, but then she was really good. And then when we started playing the show, we're like, we got to figure out some other stuff for her to do because she's a really good performer. So she
can... I don't mean this to be insulting, but is it possible she's too good for your band?
Definitely.
Okay.
Like, no,
all right.
There's no doubt about it. Every one of these people are too good for my band.
And what do you have? You have four, looks like... How many? 4 stringed instruments in
yeah,
there?
We got the Collar Quartet with us. And you want to talk about real musicians. They're actually real. We're just like dancing monkeys. Those guys actually, they were artists in residence at Juilliard. They're doing pieces by Thomas Adas. They're just like serious, serious.
People have to wear tuxedos and stuff.
They played
to hear
Disney
them play?
Hall last month. They're playing Carnegie Hall next year. They're like actual musicians.
And
they can like... I can't
Sweet.
Even read music. I don't.
And one of them is Anna's brother.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, no, they got.
Well, you guys are smart. Andrew. Just load the room with a lot of really good, talented people. You don't have to do much.
Yeah, dude. I don't even. I just press play on something
that's
and walk
around.
Now you sold out the El Rey recently.
Yeah, that was.
What has been so far the most memorable gig that you've played? Has there been one that's
Kevin
been
Kevin Bean show? I think would probably. Be.
has there been a huge gig, like a gig where you've played in front of a bunch of people yet?
I would say yeah, like when we went
to Coachella, of course.
No, Coco's.
No, Coco's.
No,
we weren't
Coco's. You played a restaurant.
This is Applebee's.
Yeah, try the pie,
dude.
Thursday nights,
really
all Applebee's. These guys are great.
There's this place in Camden in London. We were in England for 2 weeks last year, and we played, we hadn't played that big shows at all. And then we all of a sudden found ourselves in this epic theater. Like, there are 3 balconies, and it was like 1,600 people. And
wow.
It was packed,
and a lot of people knew the songs. They're really serious about their music over there. They like scout you out if you're a new band.
And they would sing along with you, and you were like, wow.
We're like, whoa,
already?
Weird. And they'd come up, are you the Ebon Toxic event? And
we're like, don't do the British accent.
Oh, sorry. Steven gets mad. Like, how come everybody sounds a little Japanese? No, that was my German.
Maybe they'll be it. Coachella next year.
All right, thank you.
Well,
Roddy.
Maybe so, Roddy. That's a good joke.
Thank you.
The Iborn Tostic event is here. Hey, real quick before the break, because I know you guys are going to go in the other room and you're going to be performing. Let me hit this, because the K-Rock listeners who are hearing you and are about to hear you perform live will want to have the opportunity to see you this Saturday night at Six Flags Magic Mountain. This is a K-Rock deal that we're putting together that really is an awesome deal, because it's $29.99. That includes access to the park all day long and the concert at night to see these guys and Katy Perry together on one bill. So all you have to do is go to sixflags.com, use the keyword K-Rock. All the details are at krock.com, but that's going to be this Saturday night at Magic Mountain in Valencia, and that is going to be a cool show too.
That's going to be really fun. Yeah.
So we'll take a break, put you in the other room, see how it all sounds. I know you got a lot of musicians in there. I'm curious to hear how this is going to come off on the radio.
Yeah, me too.
As are they. Look at their eyes. Boy, this is going to be weird.
I don't know if this is going to work or not. Thanks for having us. It's
Thank
really
you so
awesome
much.
To be on
You know, Kat
show.
Turned us on to you guys, and she's the best.
Yeah, she's,
oh, she's
great.
Amazing. Yeah.
How did she get a hold of your music quickly before we go?
Oh, I think she'd just been coming to shows. We'd been playing a lot of shows around L.A., and then I think we sent her. If you're in a band out there, send music to Kat. She'll totally listen to it.
Because she does
a
local music show, right?
Include a 20.
Yeah.
Well, and you could probably really hit that if you tried, by the way. I'm just going to – there's a little hit there. I'm serious. You got to think about it.
Both of you. All right. We'll take a quick break. The Airborne Toxic event is here. Live music.
The Airborne Toxic event is here this morning. Self-titled album is out now, available in stores and for download. We're very excited to have them performing live for the first time on our show. What are we going to hear first, guys?
Oh, we're gonna play sometime around midnight. Apparently, in a cave.
By the way, I'm right behind their lead singer, so I might join them. I'm not sure yet. All right, let's count it down. 1, 2, 3. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
At least that's when you lose yourself for a minute or two. As you stand under the bar lights and the band plays some song about forgetting yourself for a while, and the piano's this melancholy soundtrack to her smile. In that white dress she's wearing, you haven't seen her for a while. But you know that she's watching. She's laughing, she's turning, she's holding her tonic like a cross. The room's suddenly spinning as she walks up and asks how you are. So you can smell her perfume, you can see her lying naked in your arms. And so there's a change in your emotions when all these memories come rushing like feral waves to your mind. Of the curl of your bodies like two perfect circles entwined. So you feel hopeless and homeless and lost in the haze of the wine. Then she leaves someone you don't know, but she made sure you saw her. She looks right at you and bolts. As she walks out the door, your blood boiling in your stomach in a roast. Oh, and your friends say, what is it? You look like you've seen a ghost. Too drunk to notice that everyone is staring at you. And you just don't care what you look like. The world is falling around you. You just have to see her. 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 You know that she'll break you in two. We'll be right back.
Okay, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Who's with me on that? Come on.
Come on.
How about some more clapping in there, Mike? Come on. We got sound effects. What's wrong with you? There you go.
That's better.
Excellent.
The Airborne Toxic event is performing live for us this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show on KROQ. Kevin, I think you agree with me when I make this statement. If you don't go see the band this Saturday night at Magic Mountain, then you're a tool.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you really are. You're a tool.
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate.
Go to sixflags.com, keyword KROQ, details at KROQ.com to see the band with Katy Perry this Saturday night. The album is called Airborne Toxic Event, in stores now. Gasoline is another song that is on the album that I love so much. And did somebody tell me that they're using this on some of the Olympic coverage, or what's the story, Mikel?
Yeah, there's a bunch of people sprinting to this song. It's kind of cool.
How does something like that happen? How do they find your song and then put it on the TV?
I'm telling you, man, rolls of $20 bills get a lot done. I'm not even joking about that. No, we give them a song, we send it to them, and they're like, hey, we want to use this for the Olympics. And we're like, cool. We're down for the Olympics. We'd make some money. But we're like, hey, how can you be against the Olympics? So it was really cool. It was really good to be a part of it. And
they come to you and they go, hey, you're a new band. We'll put your song in front of a billion people. Is that okay? And I guess you just got to go, well, yeah.
We're like, I don't know. Okay. That was really cool then. We were like really surprised and happy about it.
So picture people running and then let's have the
swimmers,
song.
There's people running. It's a whole thing, man. Okay. It was really cool.
All the time away, you're still on my mind. We were on our own, almost all the time. Just step away for a second or two. When I close my eyes, I think of you. We were only 17, we were holding in our screens like we torn it from the pages of some lipstick magazine. And you scratch and turn and say, let's burn ourselves up till we scream like gasoline. All those tender days at your mother's house. Oh, when your father would find my hand inside your blouse. Well, they tell me that you're married now. Oh, my dear, I fear I can't understand how. When we were only 17, we were holding back our screams like we'd torn our lives from the pages of some girly magazines. And you'd scratch and turn and say, let's burn these sheets down to the seams like gasoline.
Steven. Anna. Steven. Anna, keep up. Come on now.
Oh,
when I was only 21, I wasn't having any fun. And the words you said tore through my head like bullets from a gun. And I should have just shown up and said, get in my car, let's run. And these years have seen so many imitations turning green. Each like the last, they just go past like credits on a screen. With your memory blazing through me, burning everything. Like gasoline, like gasoline, just like gasoline.
Your good-looking Asian guitar player has earned his money on that one, man. That is the Airborne Toxic event. What time can we see you guys on the Telemundo tonight? Do you know what time you're going to be playing?
I think it's Galavision. What is it? What channel is it?
Oh, is it Galavision?
Telemundo?
Sí, pero no sé.
You don't know?
I don't know. Where are we on tonight?
You're going to be on Mundos.
We're on Mundos, sí. I don't know what time, though.
Sí, señor.
Sí,
okay,
Simone.
We're going to check it out.
Orale, pues. Sí, yeah.
It's called Airborne Toxic Event. That's the name of the album, available for download or for sale everywhere. And again, the show this Saturday night at Magic Mountain. You got to go see them with Katy Perry. Guys, great to meet you. Great to have you play live. I hope we'll do it again soon, my friends.
Thank you.
You guys know the name Don LaFontaine? Don LaFontaine. You heard of him?
I have, yes, only because he has the voice of God.
Yeah.
He sure does. This is the guy who does, well, we'll have an example for you in a moment. He has been, for more than 40 years, the premier voiceover guy in Hollywood, and especially in the movies. He's recorded nearly 5,000 movie trailers, and listen to this, 350,000 commercials, it says here.
Oh.
Now, how is it possible, even if you're working all the damn time, to record over 300,000 yeah. commercials?
Well, apparently he does them all.
This is a dude who we've heard about that takes a limo from place to place, and they drop him off. He walks in, does one take, gets back in the limo, heads someplace yeah. else, does like 500 in a day.
Wow.
Well, he's unbelievable. I mean, the guy is a Hollywood legend. Unfortunately, he's hit a rough patch right now. He's got a blood clot in his lung, and he's in the hospital right now, so he's unable to work. Do you have a little piece of Mr. LaFontaine's work?
In a world... My world. Terminator 2. Judgment Day. Shrek.
Wow.
Minority Report. Friday the 13th. Dodgeball. A true underdog story. A hero in black. The adventure you've been waiting for.
That's the guy.
Welcome to my world.
Come on.
Wow.
Dear God.
No kidding. So he's down for a bit, and obviously we wish him a speedy recovery, but everybody's scrambling right now because, you know, movies continue to come out and you don't have Don to do your trailers. So apparently there are other people out there now who are getting the call or at least making the attempt to try to take over for Mr. LaFontaine.
Oh, they're going to pick up the slack while he's in the hospital?
I guess somebody's got to. I mean,
yeah, they still got to do them, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So we've been looking into this story since Ralph first reported about the illness a few days ago, and we have been able to get a hold of some of the tapes of some of the people that are applying for this work.
Oh. First one.
Okay.
Our own governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Ah, in a world where people, it's hot. And, yeah, it's incredible in this world where this guy does the thing with a hydrogen car. It's incredible.
Okay, cut.
All right. He may not be the best choice, perhaps, for this line of work.
William Shatner?
Oh.
Maybe he could pick up some of the slack.
In a world where one man must rise above. Other men do battle.
Mr. Shatner?
Crime.
We only have 1 minute for this trailer.
What?
I would go see that. Apparently he's not going to make it. Our own K-Rox Bean.
Oh.
Has made an audition tape.
Really? I didn't even know that. Okay.
Pick up some of the slack.
In a world, when one man, why is the world round? Why do planets have to be that shape? Why isn't Pluto a planet?
Okay, cut.
I wondered why they didn't call me back.
Apparently, you're not going to get much of the work. However, Bob Dylan, I believe.
Oh, here we go.
Might.
In a world. Then, again with me. Invented in the sea. Invented and rise above the crime. And in this world.
Okay, cut. I don't understand what you're saying. Cut.
Yeah.
Cut.
I don't know which movie he was doing either.
I don't either.
And finally, I believe the guy who is going to get the bulk of the work, the great Sean Connery.
In a world where you're a sucker and I a lot of one man rises above it all to his fat Scottish up a teenage. What was wrong with that?
There's a newspaper in England called the Daily Telegraph, and they are reporting that that there's a new YouTube channel that apparently is going to be run by the Pope. The Pope is getting his own YouTube channel.
I saw the Pope ghost riding the whip the other day, and it was crazy that he and his friends were out there with a video camera, and he had to put it up on the net. I don't know what to tell you.
So bizarre. So we thought perhaps we should have the Pope call us at some point.
We do not have His Holiness on the phone as we expected.
He didn't want to hold. So we're going to have to reconnect.
Well, the Pope is a very, very challenging schedule. But, you know, this is, it's not the internet is not a fad, kids. The internet is here to stay. President Obama, for instance, had a YouTube channel that was very popular during the campaign, and he thinks that was a good way for him to, you know, get his message out to people who are interested. Queen Elizabeth has a channel now. I mean,
what?
pretty much everybody has to have a presence on YouTube, it seems.
Queen Elizabeth's gone wild. She comes to spring break topless. It's really a good channel.
Oh, dear God.
Hey, Omar, have the Pope call us!
What does Omar know about the Pope? What are you talking about? Is that some guy in the Vatican I don't know about? Oh, there he is. We got him on the phone now. Okay.
Guten Tag, Kevin and Ben. How are you?
We are good. How are you?
Das ist gut. Thank you so much.
Your Holiness, who's this guy Omar that couldn't get you on the phone? What's that all about?
It's Bishop Omar, who is in charge of all of the telecommunications in Vatican City.
I see.
Well, he should be fired then.
Well, we're going to excommunicate him.
Okay.
Fire here at the Vatican.
Yeah, that's true.
I see.
All right. Excommunicate you, and then we kill you.
The story is that you are launching your own channel on YouTube with video and audio clips. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. We are doing a YouTube old Catholic version.
Okay.
Which is good because we want to show the kids that Catholicism is fun. It's crazy fun for all the kids to come join the Catholic Church.
It doesn't seem like that's what the Catholic Church is about.
I know. This is the new image of the Catholic Church. Okay. We're a crazy, zany bunch of crazy guys, and we want all the young kids to come and join the church so we can have more Catholics.
Huh, but you still can't have sex until you're married, right?
Right, that's still an abomination, like the gay. Okay. But there's other fun things you can do, and we show that in all the YouTube videos we have on Catholic YouTube.
And now, is it up already? Have you already started loading stuff up?
Not yet. Okay. We are still getting everything ready to go. We haven't launched it, as they say.
Right.
We're launching. Okay. But we're looking very forward soon to the launch, and then we will let everyone see the funny, hilarious YouTube videos of the Catholic Church.
Now, Pope Benedict, what kinds of videos should we be expecting in the first week when your channel goes live?
Most of them I will be doing myself, because we haven't collected, the people haven't made their own to send in to us yet, so I've been starring in a lot of my own YouTube videos.
Is it like speeches and stuff?
Or? Nine!
Okay!
Nine, it's hilarious hard craziness for all the Catholic kids.
I don't remember the Pope ever sounding this German before.
That's because the other one was Polish.
Oh, right. This is the Nazi one. This
I'm
one,
Pope
here.
Benedict, the German one.
I see.
Help me out, Kevin. Don't work against me.
Sorry, okay. I'm sorry, Your Holiness.
One of my first videos is this one. Catholic rain. Some get saved and others feel the pain. Catholic rain.
I can't imagine.
Abel was murdered by his brother Cain. Catholic rain. Gonna be like that. Crazy fun for the kids.
Wow. That'll be very popular. I think people will like that.
Yeah, and then, of course, a very popular one we're going to be putting up is Two Nuns, One Cup.
Oh, no, Your Holiness. Please stay away from that.
Take this, all of you, and drink from it. This is my cup of everlasting life.
Wow.
Oh, no.
But you better wash it out first before you drink from it.
That is terrible.
It's zany.
That is not zany.
Chris Crocker will be stopping by.
Chris Crocker?
Yes.
Who's that?
Leave Jesus alone!
Oh, the Britney Spears dude?
He suffered enough! Leave Jesus alone!
So how'd you get him?
For doing that. We threatened him with eternal damnation.
I see. Okay.
That'll
and
do
he
it.
Thought this would be better because he's gay. And we also have, I will be, me and two of the bishops will be doing the Beyonce single ladies dance.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Oh, awesome. We put on the black leotards and we shake our moneymakers.
That's got to be hilarious.
We'll be doing the Diet Coke trick with communion wafers.
Oh, really?
You put them okay. in Diet Coke and it makes a big explosion.
Better than the Mentos, you think?
Oh,
huh?
Much better, because God loves the wafers.
Yeah,
more
sure.
than the Mentos.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody
Mentos knows
is
that,
more yeah. of a Muslim thing.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know it had a religion.
And also, we are doing this popular song.
Kiss.
Oh, my God, Jews. Oh, my God, don't Jews suck.
Kiss.
These Jews are okay, but they're still going to hell. These Jews suck.
Come on, no.
But they're okay sometimes, Jews.
Your holiness, come on.
Jews.
You might
oh, my God, Jews.
You might want to rethink
that. Oh, my God, Jews.
You can't put that out.
It's going to be very popular.
Yeah, you can't do that.
So I hope you all tell Nigeria, make them look on the internet.
Thank you, Your Holiness.
You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. If you weren't with us yesterday, you did not hear about the new Steven Seagal, the action star from the 90s, his new reality TV show where he plays a cop. We've got some details for you on that in about 50 minutes or so. That's a man who should not be carrying a badge and a gun, by the
That's
way, Steven
correct.
Seagal.
That is correct, yeah. Yes.
But he is still rocking the ponytail.
The ponytail, and he loves himself like no one on this planet.
Well, because no one else would.
Let's talk about Bean for a minute. Bean, my partner has Asperger's. And
I don't have Asperger's, by the way. Let me just go on record in saying that.
And let us go on record in saying we've given you the quiz. The land of denial.
We've given you the quiz, and you're like at 98%. But if that's not having it, okay. But
and I'm not really that tall, so one of those, so there.
One of those one of the things that is a side product, what do you call it? Side effect of that is that he can't tell if anyone is interested in what he's talking about or not.
Yeah,
he just starts talking. Most of the time, doesn't leave room for anyone else to talk. Because he just takes for granted that everyone else is interested.
Yeah, I think the symptom is basically not being able to recognize the emotions or the expressions on people's faces to understand what it is.
There's no information conveying. About the receiver.
Right.
None.
He has no empathy at any time.
Well, yeah, that's
ever.
Different, though. I mean, it's all tied
it
together.
It is tied together, yeah.
We're
exactly.
acting like he's not here.
I know.
So we've come up with a feature called
Thanks for that info, Bean.
And what happens is
it can't be time for that again.
What
come
happens
on.
Is during the commercials and the songs that you listen to, we are in the room and Bean out of the blue. It's not like we're having a conversation, or it's most of the time it's not even leading into a conversation. It's just a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
So this is mock your friendly coworker for making conversation at the office time. That's what this is.
I'd take friendly out of that, but yes, then. Other than that, yes. So things like this, we're you know, discussing the next day's show or whatever, and Bean will say, Gary Cooper got a stamp. Now,
that?
There was no conversation about stamps. There was no conversation about Gary Cooper.
Okay, but now, in my defense,
thanks for that info, Bean.
Don't need clarification?
No. Isn't it nothing less interesting. There's not one single thing in that whole sentence that
that's interesting.
Nothing.
Isn't right. it interesting
no.
to see
no.
who each year the post office decides to honor with
not
a postage
1%.
Stamp? That's an incredible honor.
Not 1%.
And Gary Cooper, you're going back so far.
Because we don't love the post office like you do.
No.
Bean, for those of you who don't know, when he was a kid, had a poster on his wall of the Postmaster General.
Yeah.
I mean, that says everything.
I've got an autographed photo at home of the current Postmaster General, my boyfriend, Sweet Jack. You know that.
So sometimes Bean tailors them to certain people, and usually it's Mike because he knows that he can kind of get Mike to respond, even though the rule in the room is when Bean says something like that, nobody respond. Don't say anything. So I write this stuff down verbatim, who says what and how it happens. So Bean starts, Mike, you're down with Ralph Stanley being awesome, right? And
now,
then I write down, Mike says, word for word, I don't know who that is. And then Bean says, I have RalphStanley.com. And then no one says anything. And then Bean continues, I haven't done anything with it yet.
That sounds about right.
I despise the next thing.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
You can't laugh out loud or say something like, wow, and then not go on, right? I mean, basically.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so annoying.
Then you have
You're
to go.
Begging
okay.
for someone to ask you.
Wow, what? You just, if it's
hateful.
If it's interesting, just say it. Just get it out. You don't pause after, wow. So then no one said anything, being undeterred. What a beautiful full moon.
Bean, I reject you totally.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
We like what would Tyler Durden do? Because
great site.
They have great photos and they're very funny.
Yeah.
So at least there is some tie-in to something that we've talked about in the past.
Because we do often check it.
But again, just like, wow, there's more information needed, but you have to ask for it. So he'll go, Tyler's funny. And then no one says anything. And for once, neither did Bean.
Oh,
wow.
How about that?
See?
Yeah, that was the way it was supposed to.
Bean says, why is Rachel Nichols so pretty?
Now, that's a legitimate question.
Here's the thing about that question. Unanswerable.
What's the answer if that's a legitimate question?
It's the
question?
Same answer as why is a song so good? Why is a TV show so good? There's no way to quantify
no.
it. It is or it isn't.
But Rachel Nichols is so hot, though.
Right, but why?
There's no answer.
There's no answer for that. And then Psycho Mike says, pretty hot. And then there's a pause, and then Bean says, and I kid you not, I wrote this down verbatim, I'm looking at a picture of her with bangs. And then nobody says anything, and then Bean says, she looks awesome.
Thanks for that info, Bean.
She probably did look awesome.
Bean, I mean, period.
That's what I'm saying.
Bean, I've been saying that my whole life. I'll be saying it till the day I die.
Hey, I'm right here.
All right, now I ruined my own rule. My rule
you
is...
You broke your rule?
I did. I broke my own rule. Is do not speak to Bean when he does one of these things.
Yeah.
But he said, it was yesterday and the day before, something that was so absurd, I couldn't help myself. He said, guys, I got lost in the woods yesterday. And so I just thought for a second, and then I mistakenly blurted out, me too? As if we were bonding over some kind of a story that happens to everyone.
Oh, right.
Because I don't know how that happens, but it did. And then...
Thanks for that info, Bean.
One final one.
But wait, it seems to me like if you work with a bunch of people that you talk to every day, and you really did get lost in the woods yesterday, that's a legitimate conversation point. If you got lost in the woods, Kevin, I would expect you to bring that up and tell us about it. Same thing with you, Lisa or Mike.
But do you know what the rest of us would do? We would say... You'll never believe this. I got lost in the woods yesterday because I was blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
You don't just go, I got lost in the woods yesterday. And because that demands that we stop what we're doing and respond to you and ask for more details.
What happened? How long
it's the same as, wow, you can't do it.
Yeah.
You would rather I just force the whole story out at one time.
None of it. Zero. So finally, this is Psycho Mike and this is Lisa May.
Uh-oh.
And I was writing furiously in the corner because Bean only started this one. Bean just gave the jumping off
point. We do sometimes.
Really?
And then Psycho and Lisa just went crazy and I could barely keep up with it, writing it down word for word. Bean says, guys, I'm about to eat peanut butter out of a jar with a spoon. Which, first of all, is great information.
That's that info, Bean.
Endlessly fascinating story. But, so then Psycho Mike says, I eat almond peanut butter out of a jar with a spoon almost every day. And then Lisa says, why? How is it different? And then Psycho Mike says, just like drinking cream is different than butter. And then Lisa says, oh, I guess I can see that. And then Mike said, you haven't tried it? And then Lisa said, no, but it sounds good.
And you're looking for a noose or a knife or
I
a cyanide,
want to take
anything,
my life,
right?
But I would like to commend Bean on being the least offensive part of
thank
that conversation.
You
know,
thank
people
you very
think.
Much.
Thanks for that info, Lisa and Psycho Mike, you a-holes.
Oh, man.